This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You're willing to sacrifice our love.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to this PTBN Network podcast special, Hot Takes on Cold Issues. I am your moderator here tonight, JT Rosero. Of course, you know me from the mothership of Place to Be Nation, the Place to Be podcast, as well as Clotheslines and Headlines. And I do have quite the crew here with me tonight. And the concept is pretty simple. As you heard in the title, we are going to have plenty of hot takes with the crew we have tonight. And they're all going to be based on ice cold issues, topics that have been beaten to death out there by internet fans and maybe even casual fans as well. But there's a specific reason we're doing this show, and I'm going to start bringing in our panel with the man whose brainchild this whole thing was, and that is, of course, the purveyor of the Blog of Doom at rspwfaq.net, and that is the one and only Mr. NetCop, Scott Keith. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good, good. Do you want to explain what the concept was, but like what drove you to reach out and say, let's do a show on this stuff?
Well, it was actually specifically one question that I got on the blog a couple of weeks ago about Bret Hart and Montreal. And basically the blog went crazy again, even though it's been, you know, like 25 years, whatever, 20 years now, I guess.
Since, right, it'll be 20 in November, amazingly enough.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So it's just astonishing to me that people could still have this much passion about topic, even though I'm fucking sick of talking about it all the time. But, you know, hey, I'm nothing if not magnanimous. So I figured if people want to talk about this, then let's get together and do a podcast and hash out these topics once and for all. And then I figured, since I'm sick of talking about this one, we might as well hit the other ones as well that are, you know, really drive everybody nuts on the blog.
Yeah.
And, so I threw some ideas at JT there, and yeah, we came up with this.
Yeah, I think we got some good ones on tap for tonight. And, you know, our goal is to maybe make this a semi-regular series, maybe a few times a year, where we touch on these beaten-to-death topics. But we're hitting three gems out of the gate tonight. But before we get to those, why don't we go ahead and bring in our next panelist, because he's an expert in at least one specific area that we'll be talking about tonight. He is the author of the Titan Sinking series that you can go ahead and get at Amazon.com. But to do that, make sure you go to placetobenation.com/Amazon. Takes you right to Amazon. Then you can purchase all of the books in the series, the Titan Sinking series, and that is Mr. James Dixon. James, how are you tonight?
Hey, man, I'm really good. I'm really excited about this.
Me too.
I think it's a very interesting concept. I think, like you say, these topics are beaten to death, but I think we can hopefully offer some new perspectives on them, interesting perspectives on them.
And one of them, like we talked about when you were on with me last year when we had the interview, definitely plenty of legwork and research put in when it comes to the topic of Montreal for your book. So I think that'll be a great topic to discuss with you.
I thought I was done with it.
Never done.
Never. No one ever is.
All right, let's bring in our third panelist. He is, of course, the host of Rank and File on the PTBN Pop feed. You might have heard him on last week's Dadcast as well. We were talking some Disney princesses, and that is my good time buddy, longtime pal, Jordan Duncan. JD, how are you?
Well, I'm kind of wondering how I got in on this show, because I'm sitting here with two guys who wrote books on the subject, and I can barely read, to be
right.
honest.
Well, in fairness, you've been bitching about these cold issues for as long as I've known you, so,
see,
right? That's why?
For me, I don't associate myself with cold issues. I have cold takes. I'm usually dead wrong about things.
Right,
so
that's true.
Maybe that's why I was invited on, huh?
There you go. JD, that's where you're here, I guess.
All right, great.
Really looking forward to this tonight. Like I said earlier, we're going to do three topics. We're going to talk about Montreal, of course, the one and only. We're going to break down the invasion. Did it work? I don't know. And then we're going to talk the push of Roman Reigns.
Did it work? My God.
Did it work? The push of Roman Reigns. Should he be heel? Should he be face? Should he be pushed like he is? Scott has a full loaded inbox bursting with letters and emails from his readers about these topics. So that's going to kind of spear this discussion along, and then we'll just kind of break things down and talk it out and debate and hopefully put these issues to bed and finish them off once and for all. And then we'll probably give away a little a little background as well, as far as if you want to go out and study and learn some more, you can read those Titan Sinking series. Scott Criscolo, myself, on the Place to Be podcast did a compelling series, of course, with Kevin Kelly back in the day, where we went through his entire tenure, the years he was with WWF/E, and one of the big episodes we did was around Montreal. Of course, he was there in the thick of everything, and he is a conspiracy theorist when it comes to that. Not as bad as his buddy Joe Dombrowski, but he is up there as far as thinking that the whole thing was a work. So that's out there as well. We can direct you there, too. I don't know if anyone here feels that way. I guess we'll get that out.
As well, eh?
So let's start with Montreal. Does anyone here believe it's a work? Let's get that out of the way first.
No.
Okay. All right, Scott, why don't you dive into the sack to rip off our buddy Alan and tell us, first, what's the first topic you wanted to, or what's the first question we should attempt to answer here to start things off?
Well, I mean, a little background here, I guess. So, of course, I'm doing the Observer flashbacks on the blog right now. And the one that we ran into from, you know, January of 1992 was, of course, the semi-famous incident where Bret Hart lost the Intercontinental title to the Mountie. And so it came out then, because as a result of him, you know, having to job the title to the Mountie, that he sent out feelers to WCW at that point and thought that his, you know, contract was up. But in fact, contracts in the WWF at that point rolled over unless you specifically gave notice, you know, 30 days before they ended. So, you know, he didn't end up jumping to WCW. But at that point, the idea was that he, as retaliation for Ric Flair taking the world title to the WWF, that Bret would jump to WCW with the Intercontinental title. So, of course, somebody sent in a question about that, and then that spurred another explosion on the blog, because people have nothing better to do with their lives than discuss Montreal over and over again, apparently. So here was the question, and we can hash it out amongst ourselves here.
Okay, which, I like it.
Not everybody reads a blog, I'm sure. But so the question goes, so if Bret was willing to walk out of WCW with the Intercontinental belt, Vince was right to take the title off him in 1997 in the screw job, right? I mean, even if the cause and effect of his attempt to jump is wrong, if Vince read the same thing that was reported in the Observer, that Bret was willing to jump with the belt, then, you know, if he was willing to do it in 92, then why wouldn't he really be willing to do it in 97? So that was kind of the question that caused everything to explode. And, of course, once again, my mind felt like it was being squeezed into a vice having to deal with this question over and over again. But so I gave my angry response to that. I don't know if you guys want to chime in first before I, you know, give my response on it, and we can go there.
If you go with your response, man, then we can follow
sure.
up, I guess.
Okay, so basically what I said to that, once again, was that because Bret offered Vince the chance to take the title back from him anywhere in the world to any wrestler on the entire roster for 2 months before Montreal even happened. It's just because he had creative control in his contract, he just didn't want to do it to Sean, and he didn't want to do it in Montreal. And, like, if the belt was the issue in the whole thing, then he could have lost the title to Steve Austin or Ken Shamrock or Brooklyn Brawler or anybody else on the entire roster on the very next episode of Raw. And then Bret would have just laid down and happily walked out without the title and gone to WCW.
Do you believe that, though, Scott? Or do you think he put that out there knowing Vince would never take him up on that? He knew he wanted Shawn to be the guy, and he knew that if he dangled that in front of Vince, that Vince would, you know, it's kind of like the telling your kid not to eat something, you know he's going to eat it, right? I mean, so if you do the reverse psychology and you kind of throw that out there, it makes yourself look like the guy knowing that Vince will never take the bait. I'm just playing old devil's advocate. So do you really believe that Bret would have jobbed to anyone else?
I have no doubt that Bret might have been trolling Vince a little bit, but I mean, the thing is that, you know, he when it came down to it, he was a man of his word. So if Vince called his bluff on that and told him to go out and lose the title to the Brooklyn Brawler, then I'm pretty sure he would have. You know, he might have complained about it, but like he would have. I'm pretty sure he would have done it.
Yeah,
might have.
He's not one to complain.
No, but I think the general plan was to get it on to, you know, Ken Shamrock,
right?
You know, if Sean wasn't around, right? So I mean, I think that Vince would have been amicable to putting it on Shamrock, but the thing is, at that point, then both guys kind of dug in, right? And
I think the Shamrock thing comes from Cornette, though. You know, I think that comes from Cornette saying, you know, why don't you just put Bret in with Shamrock? Because if Bret won't do business, then Shamrock will make him. But I actually asked Shamrock about this, and he said, look, I never would have done that to Bret anyway, even if they'd asked me to do it, because for two reasons. One of them is Bret trained him, or helped train him, and helped get him into the WWF. And the second reason was, he said, look, with my background as a UFC fighter, it was hard for me to gain the respect and sort of trust of the wrestlers who all thought I was going to go out there and, you know, hurt them. So I never would have done that because it would have killed my career going forward. So I think that's where that one comes from. I don't think they ever would have put the belt on Shamrock.
Right. Yeah. That seemed like a red herring to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was word around like that. because it was Hugh Shamrock supposed to be involved in the four-way match that never happened, I guess, as well, in the pay-per-view after Survivor Series, that his name was bandied about in there. And, you know, Brett, like I say, had kind of specifically mentioned him as one of the people that he would have lost the title to as well. But
I just don't think he was hot enough at that time.
Oh, no, definitely not.
I think Vince always wanted the belt on Sean to then go to Steve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was... which is why he rejected all those other options. I'm sure Brett, when he was saying, oh, I'll lose it to Brawler, you know, Vince isn't going to do that, obviously. And Brett saying that, like you say, he's trolling him. And it's, I think it got to a point where they'd reached this impasse where Vince wouldn't back down and Brett wouldn't back down because they're both stubborn, really stubborn, you know. And
you don't say,
Yeah, right.
I mean, it really is an amazing situation when you look at how everything played out. It was just this perfect storm where between the wrestling with Shadows, between the contract, you know, being absurd and Vince, quote unquote, not being able to afford it, whether you believe it or not, you know, him wanting to get the belt on Shawn to give it to all, like everything just cresting at the exact same moment. It was pretty amazing timing. It's something that you feel like may never happen again, like in wrestling, the way it came together.
Which, by the way, may I just say, the fact that he went to Brett and told him he couldn't afford his $20 million contract, and then miraculously 6 months later, he suddenly has whatever ridiculous amount of
$20 million
to pay Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Like,
so, right, and he shouldn't have said what he wanted to say. I can't afford to pay you who isn't going to give me the return on the money. I mean, that's what he should have said, right? I mean, I'm not going to make my money back on you at this point.
It was by his remorse, though, wasn't it? You know, he saw that the rest of his roster were getting quite annoyed that they were getting half what Brett was getting, Sean, Taker, Steve, etc. And he realized that by getting rid of Brett, who hadn't really done great business for him in 97, they were still getting destroyed. You know, that he's actually saving money and solving a problem of not having to pay all these other guys the same as what Brett's earning. So the not being able to afford it was nonsense.
Yeah. Right.
And the other question I've always had about the situation that's never really been answered to any satisfaction is that why did he put the title on Brett in the first place at SummerSlam?
Right.
Like, because SummerSlam, he hadn't made that decision. It was when Sean had a meeting with Vince and was like, look, I'm not happy. I want to leave. Just let me go. And explained all of this to him. And Vince realized, well, I kind of need to make this decision of Brett or Sean. And Sean was younger, you know. Sean complained less about the things Vince wanted, you know, in terms of the way the company was going, not necessarily putting people over, but like the attitude thing, Brett hated how the company was going and was quite public and vocal about it. So he backed Sean, and he, at SummerSlam, I don't think he'd made that decision. I think the decision was made, I believe it was a couple of days before, I think it was the Madison Square Garden Raw in September. Which was when Vince came up with the idea of, you know, this, we definitely need to get rid of Brett. Because I think he wrestled with it for a while.
And you can see him getting, where you can see when it starts to happen, because it plays out on both Raw and pay-per-view. Like, it's Brett's front and center, and then all of a sudden Shawn and Undertaker are front and center, Brett's in the mid-card fighting the Patriot, and then in a flag tag match at the next pay-per-view. It's like, you can see exactly where it all turns in those couple weeks after SummerSlam.
It really did feel like such a pointless title reign, too. Like, it just immediately after losing the title, he gets pushed down to the middle kind of thing with Shawn getting up there with the Undertaker. It just always struck me as really strange. You know, Brett, that Vince did make the decision to go with Brett, sort of, but he never really did. Like, he put the title on him and then immediately went with Shawn as the top guy, it seemed like.
Especially since Shawn and Taker were going to feud anyway. It's like, why not just have Shawn be the one that, you know, takes it off Taker? And then goes on to Austin. But I get this question, Jordan. We'll start with you on this one. Do you think that if Vince knew, or if Michael's injury was a little more glaring that eventually happened in January, what direction do you think he goes? Do you think, let's say he's already had the discussions with Brett. Let's say this is like late October, kind of right before Survivor Series. Brett maybe hasn't officially faxed that deal over. Vince is kind of wondering what to do. He knows Sean's back may be on borrowed time. Because, I mean, that obviously doesn't happen until January. How do you think he proceeds? Does he still push Brett out and just go to Austin sooner? Does he go to someone else? Or do you think he tries to make amends with Brett and just kind of let Sean walk?
See, I think he would still kind of try and get Brett out of there, just because, as somebody mentioned earlier, Brett was so resistant to the whole Attitude era and that style of of product. And Brett was very vocal and Brett was very stubborn, you know, and every time they presented something that he didn't like, he was going to make it known. So I feel like, you know, even if he knew, okay, Sean's on borrowed time, he's only got X amount of months left, which nobody knew that at the time, especially since it wasn't until that January where he really dinged up his back in that Taker match at the Rumble, correct?
Yeah.
I think you just – the direction they were going, whether it was Sean leading the way or not, I think it was all to get to Steve Austin with the belt. And Brett was very vocal about not liking that direction. So if you could get, you know, your biggest in-house critic out of your ear, I think Vince would be one to do that.
So he wasn't against dropping it to Austin, though, right? It was more, you're saying, the direction of the promotion.
Yeah, the whole Attitude Era type stuff. That's what Brett never liked that.
Right, but he was okay with losing to Austin, I think, because I think, obviously, they were friends. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was all for losing to Austin under any circumstances, absolutely.
And I'm glad that Vince didn't pull the trigger on that, because to have Austin get his first title reign at Mania was perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, imagine if he won it on Raw in November of 97, you know?
Or even Survivor Series,
A little less memorable, you know?
Yeah, but it's funny, though, because, you know, Brett was so behind making Austin all the time, but he never lost to Austin.
Like, right.
It was just opportunity, though, you know, because he was cast out before he could have, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, it's just funny to me that, you know, he's remembered for that, and it's like, you know, he just beat Austin over and over.
I think his head it would have been WrestleMania that you put him over.
Right, the big, that's how the big loss, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to go to the next question, Scott?
Okay, well, we another one that had come up before was kind of a hypothetical one like that, which is if Medusa had never shown up on Nitro and dropped the belt in the trash can, do you think then Vince would never have kind of the bug in his ear about Brett showing up on, you know, with the belt? Now, again, I don't know that was actually the reason. I think that was kind of that's kind of become the publicly accepted PR reason from, you know, Triple H's and all that
nice
kind of thing.
But,
kind of a nice excuse, but I think, you know, it's an interesting question. Like, you know, does it, would that have come up as a reason if the Medusa thing had never happened, I guess?
I think it was a convenient excuse. I think it had more to do with just the idea of his champion possibly leaving undefeated more than, like, bringing the belt with him. I mean, it was probably in the back of his head, and maybe it would have been still a little bit, but I do think it had more to do with just the fact that his top guy walking out without losing as champion versus, like, the physical belt being part of it. I think Alundra plus Hall and Nash, like, all added up together. I think it starts with Hogan and then Savage. But, I mean, Hogan, they forced him out, so whatever. But I think Savage, Alundra, Hall, Nash, like, the four of those things all played a huge role in what happened with Brett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the perfect storm of crazy circumstances, which is why it was such a unique thing, I think, just because there was so much that had to come together for it to really happen like that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, again, the thing that, you know, of course, everybody, there's a lot of arguments on the other side, which is that, oh, well, you know, because of the Medusa thing, there was precedent for somebody showing up, you know, on Nitro with the belt and everything like that. But of course, that couldn't have happened because Bret Hart was still under contract until
December.
That's
the big misconception, isn't it?
Which is the big misconception, exactly. It's not like his contract ended at Survivor Series.
Right, that's the thing. Like, if he could have been on Nitro the next night, like everybody claims, he would have been on Nitro the next night.
Right. You
know, it's
like,
right.
Now, more than ever, after what happened to him, he would have been there if his contract allowed it. But this is what's always repeated, and it's repeated by WWE frequently, and it all comes down to Vince, the Raw the night after, told all the boys in a meeting backstage that, look, Brett was going to leave. I had to do this. He was going to take the belt with him. You know, he was going to be on Nitro with the belt. And it's like, but he wasn't on Nitro at all. So, you know, there's that logic gap that people miss. But because Vince has said it and the boys believed him, and, you know, then it becomes a thing. It's typical WWE sort of revisionist nonsense. But it never could have happened. And
much like the time-honored tradition.
Exactly.
I guess the fear could have been, too, though, that not that he shows up, but that, I mean, Bischoff could have went on and announced it. You know what I mean? Right. That's part of the fear, maybe. Like, because as it is, they came out with the Canadian flags and all that. So, I mean, maybe.
Yeah, but. Yeah. But Bischoff had flirted with that before. And essentially, the lawyers had, you know, phasers on stun, as it is with that, right? Like, if Eric Bischoff had come out on Nitro and said, oh, we just signed the WWF World Champion, they would have sued him for violation of intellectual property until WCW was bankrupt the next day, basically.
They were already in the middle of a lawsuit still.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't think you could have hinted around it without saying it and still embarrassed them? I mean, maybe. Maybe not.
Bischoff was, like, on a tight leash from...
He could have said, executives. We got a hot new signing. He's going to be a real hit, man. You know, something like that. here's a question I always wondered about this whole thing, is why did Vince go to Bret while he still had the belt? Why not try and talk Bret into a program of dropping to Shawn with the idea of getting it back at Mania, then after he drops it, then go to him and say, oh, by the way, can't fulfill your contract anymore? Right. You know, wouldn't that avoid the whole issue?
Well, I feel like
the belt off Bret before he told him.
Break clause or something in the contract?
Wouldn't he have never jobbed it to Shawn anyway?
Yeah, probably.
Like, weren't they at the point where they wouldn't lose to each other?
I don't know. I think it comes down to what Shawn said to Bret backstage that time. If Shawn had put Bret over one time, you know, during that era, then, I mean, he put him over plenty of times earlier on, but...
Sure.
But if he'd have put him over one time, then Bret would have returned the favor. I'm sure of that. If he'd have put him over in Montreal, he'd have put him over the next month, or whenever it was. The next night, even. It's because Shawn, you know, said in front of all the boys, look, Bret said, I'll work with you, I'll put you over. And then Shawn was like, well, you know, I won't do the same for you. So Bret was like, well, screw you, pal.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And, you know, because it's embarrassing the champion in front of the locker room. And, in the wrestling industry, that kind of lack of respect is just, you know, it's not acceptable. And I can see completely why Bret said, well, there's no way I'm putting him over.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah.
I think Shawn being the asshole was almost a bigger issue for Vince because, like, you just put him in that spot, JD. Like you said, you couldn't just get the belt off him to Shawn and then let him go because, you know, Shawn had run his mouth so much and Bret was just refusing altogether, like, regardless of whether he was leaving or not. Let me ask you this. Do you guys feel that Vince, I don't want to say was justified, but was right in saying, I get to decide and it has to be Shawn? Like, I know we kind of touched on this before with the Shamrock thing, but do you really think anyone else in that company, the way everything went, would have been more effective? And I'm not just talking about, like, the Montreal putting the buzz out there. I just mean, if Bret would have lost to anyone on the roster and then eventually got it to Austin, would it have been as effective as what the way, you know, Vince had it planned?
Well, you know what they could have done as well, which, I, you know, Bret would have totally been good with, I think, would be turning Owen Hart heel again and having him take the title. Just throwing that there off the top of my head.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, Bret, you know, obviously Bret would have absolutely no objections to losing to his brother and putting him over for the title and, you know, trying to make a bigger star out of him. So, I mean, just as something, you know. Just
well, wouldn't have Owen had to turn face? Well,
turn
face.
You know what I mean? One turns on the other.
Right, yeah, the SummerSlam thing, James, right? I mean, with him, he was so hot off of that.
Yeah,
well, it never would have happened because of SummerSlam, though, because Steve wouldn't have worked with him.
Right, true.
Oh, yes, I know. Then we're getting into all kinds of, you know, fantasy scenarios.
Yeah,
changing history. But, I mean,
you want to know, throw another one out that would really change history is I'm sure Bret would have lost the title to The Undertaker. And Stone Cold beats him at WrestleMania, which means Undertaker loses at WrestleMania all the way back at 13. That changes a whole lot of stuff.
And no Kane.
Undertaker has a loss there, you know?
No Undertaker-Kane match either, the first Mania there.
Yeah.
That's the thing. There was too much already lined up because they used to plan things in advance back then.
Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
You know, so it wasn't just hot-shotting like it maybe would be nowadays. And, you know, because, I mean, when we sit here right now, we don't really know what the main events of WrestleMania are. We do, but not officially. But back then, you knew from, like, October that it was Kane and Taker. And it was obvious it was going to be Austin and somebody, I guess. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
it was harder to change things, I think, back then. Obviously, they could have done anything. You know, the options were there. But
well, I'll tell you a guy who I think was still kind of hot enough, and he was in the feud anyway with Bret. And that's Vader. Like, he wasn't completely phased out like he would be in 98. He had just turned face after SummerSlam. He had the tag feud anyway, you know, into October. But he had fought Bret. Was it like that Friday Night Raw? I remember they really built it up. Like I think he could have been a good transition from Bret to Shawn if they really wanted to. Because Shawn and Vader had the
Shawn
history,
wouldn't work
too.
With him either, though. You know, so this is the problem you've got. Is Shawn
Patriot? How about
anybody?
The Patriot? You want to put the...
Oh, God. And he got injured. So.
Goldust? I don't know.
Shawn Michaels guy sounds like a real asshole. I don't know.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I'm just trying to think of guys who are feuding with, like Goldust.
Yeah,
I mean, to but go back
is, though,
to the question,
if he wanted on Sean so badly, there's a million guys that could have transitioned to him. I mean, I guess Sean wouldn't want to work with Vader, but I mean, you know, he could have just thrown it on Goldust or whatever
for a night.
You know, like a week and had Sean.
The belt meant so much,
or Bulldog or whatever, you know.
You know, I think they could have done that now, where it doesn't matter, where Jack Swagger's been a world champion.
I was just about to say Jack Swagger. You know, poor Jack Swagger. That's what we all thought of
then,
immediately.
Though, yeah, because of course we did. Back then, really, Goldust, I mean, I don't know, man. I just don't think they valued that belt too highly. You know, that we wouldn't have had any of these Montreal issues if they didn't, so...
Yeah, it's kind of hilarious now thinking about, you know, people screwing over their careers for the WWE World title.
For the belt.
Exactly.
Now it's
like
they're having a battle royal on SmackDown with 10 guys.
Well, now you can buy one from the website. You know?
No, it was a big deal at the time, and it was heady territory. Like, there was only so many guys that could have been in the mix, and you couldn't even... I mean, we couldn't have even hot-shotted Austin, really, JD, like we talked about earlier, because of the neck. I mean, he wasn't really ready by any of that time in the fall. So, I mean, you know, they couldn't have anyway at that point. I mean, I think the best case is, you know, Vince could have realized a little bit sooner, maybe you just have Taker keep it at SummerSlam and then lose to Shawn at, like, Survivor Series or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, though, I do think Vince was justified in saying, look, creative control or not, Shawn, it's not like we're asking you to put over a jobber, you know, or some undercard guy, or do anything that's going to affect your character. We're asking you to lose to our top heel.
Okay, well, here's another thing, too, though. So, you know, it's ostensibly Vince's title, right? So why doesn't he just go on Raw or have whoever, Sergeant Slaughter, the authority figure?
Yeah.
Just go on Raw and be like, well, Bret Hart signed with WCW, we're stripping him of the title, and then just do, you know, whatever, and for the title, like a tournament or a four-way match or whatever it is. Like
the Royal Rumble. You could have kept it vacated till the Rumble and just had Shawn win the Rumble.
Yeah. Yeah, like why was it so goddamn important that he had to lose to Shawn Michaels at Survivor Series? You know, that's the thing that's... I guess because it comes down to
ego.
Vince's stubbornness.
Ego. Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. One word, isn't it?
I think it goes back to, though, too. I mean, I know you can go out and be proactive about it and say, we're going to strip him of the title, whatever. But then he can still go on Nitro and say, I'm the unbeaten WWF champion.
I never lost. Yeah.
Right, I never lost. I was, you know, basically, you could do the old backline angle. You know what I mean? Like, I was never beaten for the title. So, I mean, I think the embarrassment part of it is still there. Like, not that the screwing was any better because he didn't really lose legitimately.
Really worked out great, though,
sure.
Didn't it?
Yeah, it did work out also for them in the
it's
long
not like
run.
WCW
but
WCW did anything with him anyway. So
right.
But I guess had they known that.
Vince knew that, though. Vince knew that was going to be the case. I mean, he said to Brett when he re-signed him in 96, he's like, WCW wouldn't know what to do with that.
That's right.
Well, that's why some people still believe it's a work. They think that they sent Brett there to sabotage him from within.
Well, look at how Brett was booked.
Yeah.
The other reason that people think it's a work is because if you go back and watch all those Raws from, you know, February of 1997 forward, it's like the perfect storyline builds, right? You know,
it's almost
crosses,
that's
crosses,
why it's
right?
not this will be real. Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that it's so good is why it's not a work, because
you couldn't make
it
that good.
Done anything that good.
Right.
You know, it gives them far too much credit to say it's a work.
I think we'll never know because of, tragically, and not to make light of it, but what happened with Owen really maybe is the one thing that, like, never let us find out how quickly Brett would have forgiven them and come back. Because, I mean, there were rumors already that he was thinking about coming back around, you know, by 99, right? I mean, that he was at least in his mind about looking to come home at some point when his contract was up. So
I think they'd have probably, you know, made a deal long before they did.
Right.
It wasn't.
I'm thinking I think he would have been part of the invasion, our next topic in a minute. I think he might have been part of that even. I think that soon, you know, and who knows? Maybe he leaves a little bit sooner and somehow doesn't get his career ended by Goldberg. I don't know. But I think the Owen thing is what really put us in a position where we'll never know just how deep that wound was with Montreal for Brett.
It's talking to Brett. I don't know if you guys have ever, like, talked to him direct, but to this day, it still does bother him. Even now he's made peace with them. You know, he's still got that, like, he's never got over it. Like, he once, I probably shouldn't even say this, but I'll tell you guys anyway. Tell the world anyway. He once said fairly recently to us when we had him over here, he was having a bad Montreal day. It's like, man, 20 years later, really? You know, we all sort of, like, looked at each other and went, okay. You know?
Well, it's like,
so he still thinks about it,
and you could see it when he did that face-to-face DVD with Sean where, you know, he's bringing up all the stuff and Sean's like, sorry, I was an asshole. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, like, you can tell, like, Sean had moved past all of it,
really,
you know?
It's really hard for Brett to get closure with Sean, basically, because every time Brett tries to get something out of Sean, Sean basically just says, well, that sounds like something I do, but I don't remember, so, you know.
And I genuinely don't think he does remember.
Yeah, and in Sean's defense, he probably has no memory
of
the whole year.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just done, man.
I do have another one from the that Hart Michaels rivalry DVD, by the way, that came up here too. If we want to do one last one before, but
Let's do it.
Okay, so somebody asked about the DVD and said there's a point on it when Britt talks about how he had already worked all of his contractually obligated dates for the year, and pretty much could have told Vince legally to take the pay per view and shove it, but didn't do it out of good faith or something or other. Can't remember, but doesn't that then give Britt all of the leverage in the situation without even getting into the creative control clause, right? Because he could, he wouldn't have had to show up at all. If really, legally speaking, in Montreal, he could have stayed home, and Vince would have been screwed then. So, I mean, that's another aspect that doesn't really come up very much, I think, when people are talking about it.
See a copy of that. I would love to see a copy of that contract. The 20-year creative control, X amount of dates. How many clauses are in that?
Talk to Carl DeMarco. You might have a copy still.
That'd be awesome.
Thing is that true though? Did he work those dates? Because he was injured for quite a while there in 97. So I guess it depends when the contract was from October, I suppose, or November.
Right, October 96.
I think it was a pretty limited number of dates on the contract, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I think he was. It wasn't a lot of house show stuff that he did.
And he pretty much didn't wrestle from. It was before King of the Ring it's even before Cold Day in Hell because he's in the wheelchair by then.
He's in the wheelchair, that's right, yeah.
I think his last match was the street fight on Raw the night after Revenge of the Taker when Austin puts him in the sharpshooter.
By the same token, then the Hart Foundation angle got really hot and Brett was working house shows pretty much every night for you know, 3 or 4 months like that because they were trying to get everything out of them they could around the world and in Canada. So I don't know, but I don't know.
I think legally he probably could have. If he hadn't punched Vince, he could have sued him to hell.
Yeah, that's
the
thing. Yeah.
But he lost all of his leverage. He was right legally, 100%. He was right legally to not lose.
How do you even prove that in court? Like, Vince could just stand there and play dumb. Like, no, that's part of the script. And this happens all the time. You know what I mean? Something like that. It's, I don't know. I feel like that'd be a hard thing to prove that, like, he wasn't in on, you know, it's all scripted, so this one wasn't, you know? And I think it would be hard to hold up.
I think even with the dates thing, you know, Brett could have had all the control. I think that's where Vince is smart and just knew who he was working against with Brett. He knew Brett wasn't going to hold that over his head and not show up for a date that he was advertised for. Brett's not that type of person, and he really used it against him, you know?
Well, and two, Brett's not the type that's going to go expose the business in a court case. And you know, I think that's part of it, too. His family's so ingrained in the business the way he grew up. Like, can you picture Bret Hart sitting in court talking about kayfabe and what's planned and what's not? Like, it just, you know, just...
His dad would give him the stretching of a lifetime.
I mean, even wrestling with shadows, he's kind of coy about it throughout. Like, he's not flat out mentioning, like, storylines. Like, he kind of is, but not, you know, it's still a little hidden and guarded, you know?
I think there's two problems with that logic, though. The first one is that Davey Boy did exactly that.
Well, yeah, Davey Boy's an idiot, though.
True, you know, family. And then the second problem with that is it was Brett who exposed the entire thing by calling Meltzer afterwards and sort of, you know, the one thing they didn't think could happen, he did it in the Calgary Sun as well, right?
Yeah, but, you know, did Dave say that Brett told him all this or did he just have the account?
Oh, yeah.
He did. Okay,
oh no, yeah. Brett talked directly to Dave, which is funny because basically Dave has said that that's where his kind of friendship with Bret Hart began. Because before then, Brett absolutely never hated the Observer. Right?
Yeah, sure.
I still feel like that's different than going
in his column. You know, he sort of Brett went out there and said, "I was screwed. This is what happened to me," and sort of exposed the whole thing as everything else is a work, but this was real. So yeah, I think in court, he absolutely would have done that.
Yeah, I feel like court's different than the Wrestling Observer. Like, I don't know. Like, it just feels different to me. Like, I just have a hard time seeing Bret Hart.
Yeah, this was the Calgary Sun, though. This was in the newspaper.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I just have a hard time seeing him go to court and opening all this up. But maybe. I feel like it would open up so much history. And the Davey Boy thing is, I mean, he was about to go to jail. You know what I mean? Whatever. So, like, true. He kind of had to. True. You know, he's a drug addict moron. So, I mean, like to me, like, he was... Whatever. Like, I don't think Brett always had kind of a different standard of what the wrestling business was. I mean, this is a guy that just refused to drop a fake world title to another guy is going to, you know, is going to go to court and blow the roof off like what wrestling is. And it just seemed a little weird, but he might have. He would have been so pissed that he may have. I don't know. Like, obviously, we don't know what he was thinking going in. So, yeah, I mean, it might have happened.
Maybe he would have punched the judge, too, just like this.
Frustrated isn't the goddamn word for it.
Judge Jeff Jones.
Yes,
Jones. Oh, man.
Well, Sid would have been involved and forget it. Ari, any final kind of closing thoughts, anything we didn't touch on that you've always had in the back of your head when it came to Montreal? Because this is the last time you're all contractually obligated to talk about it. JD, anything?
This is legally binding, right?
This is it. This is never again.
Put this in the blog that nobody can ever email me about this again.
You can delete every email you have in your inbox.
I frequently do.
JD, why do you put these snarky answers? JD, do you have any... any final thoughts or comments of anything that's ever been lingering for you out there?
I mean, probably nothing that hasn't been discussed to death all throughout, but I think it really is a testament to how smart Vince was through the whole thing, because I think he knew letting Brett go, it might hurt him short term, but it wasn't going to help WCW at all. And that's really why I think he did it more, you know, than anything. It didn't. He was right.
Yeah, I think he had faith that WCW would fuck it up. I mean, he said it to him, right? That's the famous line, is he said they'd never know what to do with a Bret Hart, right? I mean, that was that was always a saying. Now, what do you guys think of, like, I know it was a loyalty thing, but I feel like Anvil and Bulldog and Crush, like, those guys that walked out really fucked up. Like, even Rude to an extent, like, a guy they kind of used all right, but not great. Like, I know the loyalty part of it, but in a business like wrestling where, you know, loyalty... Yeah, but there's so few big jobs, you know what I mean? And Bulldog and Anvil, I feel like, still would have probably gotten a decent-sized push just to rub it in, if nothing else, like Owen kind of did at the start. You know, they walked away from pretty solid deals, and then it ended up really fucking Bulldog up, and Anvil did nothing. I mean, I know they got decent contracts, obviously, but... And then even a guy like Crush, I guess it maybe extended his career a little bit. But what do you guys think about those guys that walked out? Like, in hindsight, do you still credit them, or do you think they should have been thinking about their family and their job more? Because Brett even told them to stay, right? Like, Mick Foley told to stay.
All credit to Rick Rude. Like, you know, he was the guy who was like... He went in there and basically told Vince to his face that he was an asshole for doing that. And I mean, nobody's going to mess with Rick Rude. So, I mean, I think really good on him for standing up for himself and walking out there. And, you know, he was easily replaced in his spot anyway. So it's not like that was any huge loss there. And of course, he had already done that, already walked out on the men, you know, knew that they would take him back again eventually, you know, like he did in 1990. Right. So, I think, I think Rude was a stand up guy and everybody knew that.
Yeah, but I'm curious if these guys all walk if WCW wasn't an option, you know? Like, is there,
right,
you know,
no,
is there loyalty a little bit different case if WCW is not there with, you know, multi-million dollar contracts?
Rude was doing fine for himself before in ECW, and it was like they called him, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's not like he was begging for a job from either side, basically.
Yeah. Then you wonder if, you know, Bulldog and Anvil walk, if it's Sean that gets screwed in Montreal. Probably not.
Probably not.
Right,
yeah. The thing is with Bulldog, though, he was so hot over here in England that, you know, he always would have been in a good position. Mm-hmm. He always was, you know, he was always in a good position in WWF, and in WCW they just wasted him. It was such a waste. It shortened his life, you know. The trapdoor situation, you know, exacerbated his drug problem, and, you know, it was a problem he had anyway, and
right,
it would have taken him early anyway, but it certainly took him earlier, I think.
I think really, like, the one night only pay-per-view probably kind of crushed his spirit as well. That was really the end of him as any kind of main event talent. I mean, that was just,
you know, if he'd have stayed, he probably would have won the return with Sean if Sean hadn't have got injured, you know, at the Mayhem in Manchester show, but which would have been a pay-per-view if he'd been around, I guess.
God, what a dick move on Sean's part.
It was
like,
bad,
even now it makes me mad. Like, you know, just, it's like, well, I dedicate this match to my dying sister, and then the day of the show, Sean decides that he's going over him.
Like, well, it's like, if you didn't know Sean is the asshole, though, I think part of you would say, oh, you know, okay, this is like building great heat for the eventual turn. But knowing that Sean was such a prick that he was never going to lay down for any of these guys, like, that's what makes it that's what makes it bad, you know. Like,
I don't think that was a Sean call, though. You know, I think that was a Vince call. Like, Vince knew that show that he was going to be getting rid of Brett, and he thought, you know, let's get the belt off Davey, because if Brett goes, Davey's probably gonna go with him. So he knew what was going on at that point, and I don't think it was Sean. I honestly don't.
So it's almost like Sean's like the boogeyman that Vince can use. Like,
yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That everyone Sean, believes Sean's that Sean.
And yeah, he was so pilled up, he didn't give a shit anyway.
It's not like Sean's going to remember, so yeah.
Sean doesn't care. Sean loves being the guy who everyone hates.
Why did Vince just blame the whole Montreal thing on Sean then in the first place? Just because, right. Well, Sean's idea.
Well, it's a good thing he didn't, because it, you know, led to the Mr. McMahon character that, you know, I think Vince was always fine taking the heat on himself.
Eventually. He babyfaced himself, or he tried to, didn't he, at first?
Yeah, right. But I think he knew deep down in the end, like, he was going to take the heat on him, because he even said that to Sean, like, get out of here and deny it, you know, let me take the brunt.
Yeah. He wouldn't have put that on Sean. Vince is, like, he's a lot of things, but he certainly doesn't back down from anything, and, you know, he's always going to be like, well, it's my company, my decision, I'll stand there and take the brunt, good or bad, you know? Mm-hmm. Which, good on him for that, I guess.
I think what hurt Bulldog and Anvil too in WCW was that didn't the lawsuit prevent them from teaming with Brett or the contracts or something? Yeah. So they couldn't even be associated with him. Like, right. So I mean, really, what good is Jim Neidhart when you can't even like be tangentially like, you know, linked to Bret Hart at all? I mean, he's worthless at that point. I mean, 1998 Jim Neidhart without any ties to the Hart family is like,
yeah,
okay.
That was the whole again. That was the whole legal thing, right? Where they came into WCW in order to get out of their car. Actually, Bulldog had to pay some ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah,
to get out of
the
contract.
$250, like, I think it was.
$250, wow. Yeah. And then of course, once he got there, he was contractually not allowed to mention anything involving Bret Hart or the Hart Foundation or the fact that he was from Calgary or, you know, any connection to that at all. So at that point, then they were worthless.
Scott or James, anything you want to cover before we take a break and then head into our second topic?
God, no.
No, I think you covered it.
All right, there you go.
I think we've all covered Montreal enough for a couple of lifetimes.
All right,
so excited.
Listeners can buy the books, you know.
That's right. Buy the books. Head to Amazon through the PlayStationNation.com link. Purchase all the Titan Sinking series. You get all the build up and then also the Fallout. And of course, listen to that Kevin Kelly episode. Listen to all the Kevin Kelly episodes. They were pretty awesome. And he went deep into this stuff, too. So. A lot of fun. So why don't we take a break, take a breather, we'll regroup, kind of shake off the dirtiness of Montreal, and when we come back, it's time for war.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
All right, Place Nation, we are back here for segment two, our special podcast episode, Hot Takes on Cold Issues. And you may have heard the voice of Kevin Kelly there during that break, of course, talking about all the different feeds available to you here at PlayStation.com for your podcasting needs. And like I said, Kevin talks a lot about both of these topics that we're talking about here tonight, Montreal, and the one we're about to dive into now, because we're going to fast forward about 3.5 or so years-ish to the invasion, to the spring of 2001. WWF had just purchased WCW and ECW, and Mr. Keith, we actually did a podcast on this as well, at least that time frame, if you remember a few years ago, with our buddy Will. We went right through that that whole period, the spring of 01 in the world of wrestling. And so WCW was purchased. They made a brief token appearance at WrestleMania, but it wasn't until in the spring, a couple months later, when the actual invasion began in earnest with, of course, was it Lance Storm and Mike Awesome and Booker T showing up at King of the Ring, and everything kind of came from there in June. And then we had the infamous WCW/WWF Raw match with Booker T and Buff Bagwell stinking out Seattle or Tacoma, wherever it was. And that kind of just put them on the wrong foot from there. And then before you knew it, it wasn't even WCW anymore. It was the Alliance. and then it was over. So
Stephanie had a beret.
Right. So, Stephanie was an artist. And I feel like, you know, it's an interesting time because the TV and the pay-per-view in ring quality remained very, very strong. In some ways, it may have even been stronger than 2000, which to me actually had softer quality in-ring at times on a week-to-week basis, or at least pay-per-view quality. If you look at some of those 2000 pay-per-views, there's more disappointing ones in there than you may remember. But to me, 01, even with the invasion, still had such a high level of in-ring quality. You maybe didn't notice the stink that was going on until a little bit too late, into how badly they botched the angle itself. So, you know, JD, we can start with you. Any initial just memories or thoughts of kind of when you realized that this thing was going downhill?
Trying to limit it to one. I think showing the WCW guys like up in like nosebleed seats at WrestleMania didn't help. Kind of made them look like third rate, you know, like they couldn't even get good seats to WrestleMania. For me, that whole Raw where ECW appeared, debuted, turned, and they basically burned through what could have been 3 months worth of stories in an hour and a half, I think really hurt. That's probably the one that sticks out to me is, you know, the ECW debut and then the Alliance and all that stuff all happened in the span of one episode. And I was, it was at the time, it's like, holy crap, this is all happening. But then it's like, why did that all happen so fast?
You know? Right.
So that's probably the big one for me is how quickly that all happened.
How about you, James? When did it kind of click for you that it was not going to go right?
DDP, you know.
Oh, yeah.
See the way they used him. Like, holy shit. What, you know, oh, DDP's some sort of rapist.
Hey,
stalker.
That's right? Hall of Famer.
Seems to be Hall of Famer.
He deserves to be in that Hall of Fame. I think he's one of the great guys in wrestling, but that angle, and he's, you know, anybody else, any of the top stars in WCW would have said no fucking way to that thing, but you know, DDP, Mr. Positive, he's like, yeah, I'll do that. That's fine, you know. And it was just so bad. And then when, you know, the guys they were bringing in, and it's like Lance Storm and Mike Awesome, and you're like, who cares? Like, who cares really about those guys? You know, you want to see the big names. For all they couldn't work to the same level as those guys could, you know, in the ring, they were still big stars. And you wanted to see Austin and Hogan, you know, you wanted to see Rock and Sting or Taken Sting or whatever it might have been. And when it's like, oh, it's Mike Awesome, and, you know, Booker T is okay, I guess, but he's still not the what you expect or what you'd want from a full-on WCW versus WWF feud.
I think you have to look at the time period that was kind of unique. I feel like looking back, you feel that way when you say, oh, they could have had the big names. But at the time, and I don't know, maybe I'm off on this, but I feel like there was a real backlash against some of those names. Like, everyone was sick of Hogan in 2001. Like, I don't know if a lot of people wanted him there. Like, I felt like there was such a push for guys like Booker to get a, you know, to get some rub on top, and everyone loved Paige because how hard he worked. But even he was getting some backlash towards the end of WCW with the Millionaires Club and all that shit. I don't know. I feel like they wanted to see guys like Storm and Booker, like, get their chance to shine. I think once it started getting going, you realize, all right, you know, there's not enough star power here.
The question there is, what about Goldberg, though?
You're right.
Right, that's one, yes, for sure. But I feel like a Hogan, a Hall, and a Nash, and those, like, that, I don't know, I feel like those guys were still not, the nostalgia hadn't really come in yet until, like, you know, 02, when everyone realized, oh, shit, we really do want to see these guys. I feel like 01, you still kind of were done with them. Like, everyone was, I remember people being happy when Russo fucked Hogan over on that Bash of the Beast. Like everyone was like glad when like that shit ended. Am I misremembering that, Scott?
Is it the same audience though?
Yeah, it's not the same audience. Exactly. Like WCW had a very distinctive audience, right? And the thing that keeps getting lost in the midst of time is that WCW died, and that whole audience disappeared. Like they didn't move over to WWF. Like when WCW went under, that was it. There was literally, whatever it was, 4 million people who stopped watching wrestling and never came back, which is, you know, which is really crazy.
Do you think they'd have come over if those names had come over?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
I think initially.
Maybe initially for you know, somebody like a Ric Flair who had a lot of, you know, ties to WCW, but, you know, like Lance Storm didn't really, like, you know, you know, Booker T, Lance Storm, those names aren't really like entrenched WCW names, right? Like if it was, you know, Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen or something like that, whereas people that, that people knew of as WCW names, or if they got Eric Bischoff right away, something like that, right? That might have...
I think the mistake was not doing it right after Mania. I mean, they waited till June. Like, I think some of the buzz had worn off and some of the fans had probably moved on. I mean, that said, Invasion still did a monster buy rate, but, you know, I think some of the coolness had dimmed, because remember, like, the excitement when, like, Rhino and Spike Dudley showed up, when, because then it was starting to feel like, okay, like, all these guys are all of a sudden going to flood the company and it's going to be chaos. And then we had status quo of Triple H and Kane, and you know, like for those couple of months in April and May, we're like,
yeah, that's the thing though too, is you could have doled it out one person at a time for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they just, you know, all of a sudden it's RVD and Tommy Dreamer and Rhino, and you know, just boom, 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 all these guys, and it would have made it much more important if just, you know, Lance Storm showed up, but it's like, holy shit, it's Lance Storm from WCW, and then, you know, end of show. And what's going to happen next week, right? But as, instead of just cramming everybody into the one episode like that, I think.
Yeah.
They were too tight. Vince was too tight. And, you know, he ended up bringing all these guys in anyway. And, yeah, they had those Time Warner contracts that they would have to pay to get them out of. But you know what? They were public by that point. They had plenty of money. They could have not wasted it on the XFL and maybe bought...
We're going to talk about that.
Well, I think it was arrogance, too, though. I feel like they, you know, everything he touched was gold for a couple of years. So I think in his mind, it was like, why am I going to touch this dead brand? I can take what they're giving me and make it work. Well, you know, and then I can also kill WCW for good and, you know, satisfy my ego. But I think part of it was they got really, really arrogant about assuming the fans would be backing them, because... It's hard to remember a time, given their adversarial relationship with fans right now, in that 97, 98 time frame, like, they were kind of the underdog, and there were a lot of fans that were on the WWF bandwagon against WCW because of the way WCW was treating the mid-card guys, like Jericho and Benoit with the glass ceiling and just tired of the old guard. And WWF was pushing, in theory, you know, even though they were the same age, some of the guys, in theory, pushing the guys that had always been held down with Austin, with Mick Foley and Goldust and Pillman, you know, all these guys that everyone wanted to see elevated and jump ship.
Right.
And now WDF is doing that. And WDF was red hot. And I think it wasn't until late 01 when everyone realized, like, I think so many people kept giving them the benefit of the doubt that they're going to turn it around, like, because they had earned it from 97 on. Like, they had everything they touched worked for the most part. So I think everyone kept saying, like, all right, next week will be the week. Next week will be the week. And then all of a sudden we're sitting here, it's November, and it's terrible. You know, and we're like, oh, shit. Like, okay, they never figured it out, you know?
You know why, though? It's because of one key change backstage, why it... For me, why it started to fall apart,
and
that's when
going.
Stephanie started booking.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
you know that killed it. It started to suck around late 2000. That's when it started to fall apart.
Right, and they masked it. They masked it in early 01 with those hot pay per views, but
they did.
Yep,
they did.
But you could tell
nothing
the depth
made
wasn't
sense.
There. Yeah,
you know a lot. It used to make sense in 2000, and everything was logical and built and was progressive, but. 2001, it was just sort of stuff happened and there was no real logic to some of it.
Well, and there was that it was like the transition where it went from logical making sense to kind of like what I said earlier, where it still makes sense, but it was like you're watching it fast forward. You're watching so much happen at once, and then it just goes off the rails where stuff's just happening, just to happen.
Well, I think, I think too, like a good conversation was the, or comparison, I should say. I don't know if you guys remember the wrestle crap guy, Artie Reynolds, when he did the Death of WCW book or whatever. I thought he had an interesting story in there about how WCW is still selling out, like, you know, through 98 or whatever, you know, even into early 99, because everything is in advance and it takes you a while to realize that things have gone bad because you keep giving that benefit of the doubt. Like, they were so hot and everything they did was so great that all of a sudden you're sitting 6 months later thinking, wow, this has not been good for a while. Like, and I feel like that was WWF into 02 when all of a sudden things started to finally, the ratings started to dip and, you know, everything hit at once because then you're like, oh, wow, this really hasn't been good in almost a year now. But you didn't realize it because you kept assuming at some point they're going to get it back because they had been good for a while.
I think the XFL was a real wake-up call to people too.
Yeah.
Where, you know, early in the year where it seemed, you know, That was the public perception of Vince. You know, Vince could do no wrong, and Vince decides he wants to have football league, and then all of a sudden, they're advertising it as, you know, come watch the XFL, the lowest rated show on the network, right? And it's just like, right. Just where did this go off a cliff for them, you know?
Right.
It's I think there was a lot involved there in Vince's mind too, where he had to prove that he was still master of his domain, you know, like just had to go out there and crush WCW once and for all to kind of take back his ego, I guess. But
how different do you think things go if USA or whoever Spike, who was it at that point, Spike, didn't balk at giving the W, because, you know, they wanted to do the WCW show with Shane, right? I mean, that was the plan. Right. So say Spike doesn't balk. Do things go completely differently?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like, I was in touch with, there was writers that I was contacting at that point, right? And I was getting kind of week by week updated what was going on, which is kind of funny. And the whole idea was that, yes, they were supposed to, they were going to establish two different shows, right? And, you know, like, original plan was selling to a different network, and then, you know, it was going to be selling to, you know, their Viacom network, and things went, you know, bad there because of the WCW name. But yeah, like Triple H was supposed to go to one brand and Rock was supposed to go to the other brand as kind of the leaders of it. And Shane McMahon was supposed to get the one, and, you know, and Stephanie would get the other. And, you know, that was kind of like, you know, the
look where we are today, right?
Right? But yeah, no, exactly. Like WCW was like, they had, like, I've seen copies of the tickets, right? They were selling WCW branded tickets for shows coming up then, right? Like they were going to do a whole WCW tour. That was going to be I guess it would have been a secondary brand, but like, mm-hmm. They absolutely had plans and they had things booked, and, you know, just like they did with the brand split the year later. This was going to be a thing that was going to happen. I think it would have been better. It would have given a little bit more credibility. But by the same token, if Triple H is the head guy on the WCW show, I can't imagine it going too well for anybody on there. It probably would have ended up being like, you know, like Triple H's world champion in 2002, right?
Right.
Well, he wouldn't have been back for at least 8 months, so right? So
right, yeah, exactly. Well, of course, that changed everything. So, as well,
that's
too,
a benefit.
Right? So, yeah, Triple H getting injured is always a benefit, I find.
Are you sure?
it's you know, I'm curious to see how long that would have lasted, or if it would have, you know, how long it would have lasted under the WCW name before maybe they just like made it WWF or something. You know what I mean?
that was absolutely the plan. You would have to think was to right. to run WCW touring company and then slowly phase it into like the same way they did with, you know, the WWE version of ECW, right? Like
never have allowed it to succeed, would he? Because I mean, history has proven that with, like you say, with ECW. And I mean, even the fact that they beat Sting, you know, all those years later, just and pitched it WWF or WWE beating WCW. It's like, who gives a shit about that anymore, you know? And still, they just can't forget, you know, that they were beaten briefly. Vince hates losing, right? So he's never going to accept that the guys who beat him can be pushed and on a level with WWE. It never, ever would have lasted, regardless of how they did it.
Yeah. Now, there was another question that came up here. Well, actually, a very old one. I was just looking at my mailbox here. Is that why the question comes down to, why did we need to involve the WCW name at all, right? Like, in a sense, it would have been money better spent, you'd have to think, just to bring in, say, Goldberg and do the dream match with Steve Austin. Because that would have made more money. They would have made 10 times more money than they did off the Invasion, even. Just off one one or two pay-per-views from those two guys there. And it's just, it doesn't even make sense, really, you know, why the WCW name was even needed to do that, when really, you know, all you had to do was invest the money in one guy.
That right, audience that Scott was talking about, though, you know, it's that 4 million people. That's who you're trying to attract.
That's who they're chasing. And obviously, you know, then it leads to the question, you know, that's who TNA has been trying to chase for years as well, right? Because that was the whole point of TNA.
They haven't found any of them yet.
No,
exactly. It's like, well, we're gonna take everybody who ever worked for WCW and put them on this television show, and then we're going to hope that, and, you know, and it's the same thing with there was a discussion about it on Observer Radio recently, where it's like you have all these MMA companies who it's the same thing, right? They're like, oh, well, shit, UFC draws, you know, they do, you know, whatever, it's, you know, 2 million people for buy this pay-per-view, right? So all we have to do is capture even 1% of that audience, and we'll be a huge smash success, right? And it just never works out that way, because it's different audiences, and it's just like
people,
nobody ever learns that lesson.
People are loyal to brands. That's the thing. And people are loyal to WWE Now. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people still watch WWE Now because they've always watched it, and it's habit almost. Because I don't think many people watch it because they enjoy it every week. I certainly don't.
I think it's habit, and I think part of it is, you know, they always find a way to give you just enough to make you, again, to make you think that better's coming down the way. You know, it's like just when everyone was really ready to tap out, we got Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 30. You know, like that, okay, all right, I'm back. And then he gets hurt.
He went back for 16 years, though, you know, more or less. You know, since the Attitude Era, which I mean, I don't love the Attitude Era, but I think it was obviously hot. But, like, has it ever been as hot? It just hasn't. And there's been good moments, but it hasn't been consistently great
I mean, there's just enough there for those fans to keep.
Yeah, there is.
Like you know, there. Those habitual fans to not finally leave, because there's always just that one John Cena, AJ Styles match away from, you know, oh, Nakamura's coming up after Mania. So there you go. There's more people that are going to hang around to see what he does. You know, like there's always just a little, just enough, you know, the UK tournament. Oh, the Cruiserweight class. You know, like there's always just enough to keep people from finally ripping that Band-Aid off. I think at this point, now, obviously they've shed a lot of viewers, but I think at the point we're at now, that's why, like you said, that brand loyalty has kept them here, and they know how to just throw out just enough to keep those people engaged.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. So let's throw another topic here on the invasion for the other elephant in the room as to why it failed, is of course Steve Austin's heel turn at WrestleMania,
right.
And what a giant flop that ended up being.
Not creatively.
Would things have been better if he hadn't turned? Do you think?
No.
No. All right.
Sean, sweet, but next.
The reason why I don't think they would is I think that who are they going to bring in from the invasion that's.
No one's bigger than him.
That's going to beat Austin,
right?
You know,
Goldberg.
He's just going to beat.
Goldberg.
Yeah, I guess Goldberg's the only one. I'm thinking of who actually showed up. Yeah. You know, like.
Okay, so if we accept then that Goldberg wasn't coming in, and that they couldn't get him, yeah, I guess it does kind of narrow down the possibilities as to who can.
The Hurricane.
No, yeah,
couldn't it have been Jericho? You know, couldn't it have been Benoit? Couldn't it have been those guys who were in WCW previously, who they were elevating at that point anyway?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and do it that way around.
How hard would it have been to have, say, Chris Benoit be like, ha ha, I've been working for WCW all along, asshole.
Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
Exactly. Yeah, I just feel like no one touches.
People would have bought that.
Yeah. To me, though, the creativity of the heel turn worked. Well, like, I thought the work he did was brilliant on some level.
Oh, yeah. In the ring, he was great in 2001.
Right. Just, you know, didn't turn it. But I think part of it is that they didn't have a compelling face on his level. As a heel. Like, I don't know if him as a heel was even the main problem, is that they had no one on either side to really match him on the opposite side. It's like
losing Rocky at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was rough. Yeah.
Because Angle was great, but he wasn't there yet, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Angle was miscast as the All American baby face, oddly enough. But I mean I think obviously that they wanted Triple H to be the guy.
Yeah.
And Triple H was just not the guy. And of course,
but could he have been?
People who they want to be the guy later, but
could he have been if he turned the night after WrestleMania 17? You don't think he could have maybe things don't go differently?
Yes, I think there's people were ready for it at that point, and I mean I don't know long term it would work, but yes, I think had they gone through with it as it was looking like they were going to, yes, that could have been something if they'd done the double switch like that and had Triple H become the big baby face. But
I think that's the bigger missed opportunity, honestly, not turning him that night.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that pop he gets when he comes out, you know, to save The Rock. You think he's going to save The Rock and take out Austin is like, I mean, you would think, he was set up for a big run. To me, the real, where everything went to shit was that right there when he turned and they were revealed. After they just spent months killing each other, that there and now they were revealed to be a team. Like, to me, that was a real botching of the Austin heel turn, not Austin going heel. That's just in my opinion.
Yeah, in fact, you can kind of pinpoint the end of the Attitude Era to that one. That one little thing in a lot of ways, right? Because, you know, it was like you killed off Austin and you killed off potential Triple H in one shot and Rock's gone.
Rock's gone.
That's,
right.
Yeah. And it's like, what do you got left?
Kane.
Taker and Kane.
That was Taker it. And Kane.
And again, they still could have maybe saved it if they went to Benoit and Jericho quicker. Not that they helped ratings a ton by the time they got there, but they wasted 2 months dicking around with Taker and Kane, which no one wanted to see.
Oh, it's so bad.
I mean, and that's not hindsight. That's in the minute. You know, that's everyone was like, oh, my God, they're going to get this now. I remember the groans like the week after the power. I mean, you could have even run the fucking Hardys in that April pay-per-view, and it would have been much bigger because that was hot too, and they beat the shit out of them and Lita.
Yep.
You know, they could have done that match, but Taker. No one wanted to see Taker and Kane at that point.
No one to see Taker at all at that point. You know,
right? Go read Scott's reviews. That's, I mean, that that'll tell you. You know where everyone's mind was.
Quick tangent here, James. Have you ever heard this? Have you heard the story from Kevin Nash that Undertaker was supposed to jump to WCW at that point? Kind of came up with the American Badass character because you know, he needed something that wasn't the Undertaker. Why the fuck would he want to jump to WCW in 2000? Oh, you'd be a smarter guy than that, right?
It's bullshit. It was 97. That was an option, and I think it was. He was just so sick of Sean and Brett and all the, you know, the fucking around going on backstage. That he'd had enough, and I think there was a point in 97 where he would have, or was considering the option. It wasn't in 2000. Nash is full of shit, as usual.
What a shock.
But basically, that American Badass gimmick would have been what he did in WCW, should he have jumped, because he couldn't have done Undertaker.
Right, yeah.
But he ended up, he wanted to do it because he wanted to be a biker, because he is a biker. You know, he wanted to cut his hair, and it's just like that. That was his way of doing it. He was sick of playing this gimmick, and
it worked for him.
Obviously, it worked great.
I mean, that match, you know, that whole thing with RVD. I mean, you know, that's what really got, you know, kind of lit the candle for him again after just that slog to roll one.
Sarcastic. Did you really like it? I hated the American Badass.
No, well, yeah. I mean, by the end, but I thought the turn was like much needed. I mean, if you look at where he was at throughout 01, with, you know, he had put on a lot of weight. He was dragging down every match he was in. Like, he obviously wasn't leaving, so I mean, he had to do some kind of change. And I thought that was a good one, just to freshen up his look. He did some of the hardcore stuff, became an asshole. He could talk a little bit more. No, I thought it was needed. I think it went on too long, but I thought for like that first 6 months or so, until, you know, he won the title or whatever, I thought it was refreshing. I thought all the Flair stuff was pretty good.
Seeing him in that era, because, you know, I used to hate seeing him in that era, and then as soon as he reverted back to the, you know, the gimmick we all know and love, then, you know, I quite enjoyed seeing him again. And I think he probably hurt himself as a draw by changing that gimmick. I don't think anybody really wanted to see some biker guy.
Yeah, but you were excited to see him come back as the Dead Man. You don't think?
Oh yeah.
If he didn't take that break, you know what I mean? You don't think you would have been hungry?
It was like watching Chains for 5 years or whatever it was. You know, it's like, who gives a fuck about Chains?
Yeah, and he did. And the other thing too is that he stopped doing all of his signature stuff, right? He did the power bomb instead of the.
But he wasn't going away, you know. He wasn't going to leave.
But do you not think he'd be more effective playing his traditional gimmick in during this invasion? You know, of being Mr. WWF.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just look at, you know, the SummerSlam. The other thing that killed it was, you know, I guess we could discuss, you know, the DDP stalker angle then too, as a part of that, right? And you know, the way that was another thing that might have given some juice to the angle to make it last longer too, if Undertaker didn't then completely destroy him at every opportunity and squash DDP and Canyon at SummerSlam basically by himself.
You know, he was doing that to everybody at that era, though, wasn't he? Kurt as well.
Brutal. And,
you know, you sort of forgive him when he's doing the Dead Man gimmick because it kind of fits. But when he's just this biker guy, it's like.
You know what? Let me clarify too, James. I think there's some miscommunication on our part. I was talking about the heel turn when he went American Badass as the heel.
I hated that too.
Okay.
I hate it.
I don't think I didn't like the face. I thought his face, American Badass, outside of his return when he smacks Vince and Vince does the funny walk. Like, to me, that was the highlight of the face Badass. But heel Badass, I liked like that 6 month stretch from when he turned.
I agree, it was the lesser of the two evils was when he turned heel.
Yeah.
You know, it was better, but I still don't think it was good, personally.
The DDP stuff was real bad. I mean, and the angle stuff was unforgivable in 2000. I mean, there was like no reason for him to squash him on that show. I mean, that was just, that was the disgrace. I mean,
we know the DDP is happily married to, you know, Kimberly, who's
right.
Super hot. Like, why would he want to go after Sarah Undertaker?
Well, then, like, Jesus. I thought the initial explanation was okay. Like, he said he did it just to piss off the Undertaker so he could be famous. Like, okay, like, that's something. And then he gets the shit kicked out of him, and then he really becomes, like, obsessed with Sarah. Like, you know, and then Sarah pins him. But, like, that's where it went bad. Like, I feel
like
if he...
With WCW champion, why does he need to be fucking famous?
Yeah, well, he's coming in.
He is famous.
Yeah, but I think the story is he's coming in and fucking with the...
With a splash, yeah.
Yeah, with the big... He's going right up to the biggest guy in the yard and pissing on him by, you know, fucking around with his wife and whatever. Like,
that well, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you end it there and then it becomes a feud over that, it's fine. Like, drop the Sarah stuff. But the fact that they kept Sarah going is what made it awful.
And then she pinned him.
Yeah,
well.
Brutal.
That helped.
That was awful.
That helped. Yeah. Let me ask you guys this one real quick thing about the invasion.
Yeah.
Why, with all the WCW guys that they brought in, did they start changing the way they all looked so they were unrecognizable from WCW guys? I mean, I know why, because it's Vince and that's what he does.
That's what he does, yeah.
But, you know, of all the times to not do it, surely, you know, because think of guys like Raven, who they'd already done it to, but, you know, you've got, like, DDP, and he's just wearing these generic tights. Doesn't look anything like the DDP. He's got stupid hair, you know. And there's a couple of examples. Kidman stops wearing his jeans or his jorts or whatever the hell they were. And all these guys look completely different and so cookie-cutter and generic and... None of them have characters anymore. None of them have gimmicks or anything.
Hurricane's the only guy that went the other way. He's the only one that got more of it.
He went the opposite direction, though, yeah.
And he's one of the only ones you remember.
Right, he's the only one of the ones that got
exactly.
over.
So, why did they do that? Like, other than because Vince is Vince and wants to control everybody and everything. Like, where are they going to go? He owns all of the trademarks and likenesses and everything anyway now.
Yeah, I think they're just so compulsive about little things. I mean, this is the same time period where... Lance Cade had to change his name because they had another Lance on the roster. You know what I mean? I think it was
And Regal too. Wasn't that why they changed Regal? Because it's the Steve Austin, Steve Regal.
Two Steves, yep.
A perpetual need to tinker, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. They have all these people. They have all these people in the, you know, the design department. They have to justify their salary, right? So, you know.
Right.
Creative Services, they call it.
Creative Services, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. The thing is, they made so many... It's like WCW. They made a lot of little mistakes at first, and you can forgive them because they're so hot, but they all add up, like paper cuts, right? And eventually they bleed out. And WWF was the same around this era, you know, promoting Steph to that position, the XFL turning Austin, you know, not bringing in the names and changing all the guys, not turning Triple H. Or however, you know, you can think of a ton of these things, the DDP thing. So when you add them all up, that's why it fell apart so very quickly, I think, because it became increasingly hard to forgive them for things because it was every single week they do something fucking stupid. But and then Stephanie in the beret and the ECW thing, which I can't believe we haven't mentioned yet.
Well, the only highlight for that was the night with the singing and then the Milkmania. Like, that was the peak of Stephanie in the beret. That was about it.
Oh, God.
Was that with the bouncing Austin head to follow along?
Yeah.
You've
got Heyman right there. You know,
well, Heyman's Heyman perpetually has to be Stephanie's bitch. I mean, that's forever.
That's his gimmick.
He's got to take it from her over and over. I mean, that's a big part of it, too. Stephanie being the owner of ECW is fucking stupid. You know, it should have been, if you want to involve her, why can't just her and Shane be co-owners of WCW, that they use their money for that? And then Heyman was ECW, you know? If you have to have her involved, if you're, which you do, apparently.
Yeah. And I mean, even then, they stumbled into RVD getting really hot around that time in the summer, and they could have even redeemed it, by putting the title on him.
He couldn't work though, right?
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, apparently, well, he did.
To the face.
I know he did hurt some people, but I mean, like, you know, so what, right? It's wrestling.
Being bust lips, though. That's all it was. It's not like he injured anybody,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
A couple of bust lips in wrestling, and we're crying about that. Really, it's.
Yeah, I mean, like, look at these guys, and, you know, the British wrestlers now, like, Jesus, you know, go out there, if you don't bust your lip up, then you're...
Well, look at Seth Rollins right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins injures everybody.
Right.
According to Brett.
Unsafe worker.
But RVD, I think, No Mercy was the time to pull the trigger on him three-way. They should have given him the belt. You could have still run Austin and Rock. The two titles anyway. Giving RVD the WWF title would have been huge. And then, you know, you go from there. But, I mean, why not? Capitalize on that. He was never the same after that. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And they pinned him in that match. That's the worst fucking part. I mean, they could have gotten away with not pinning him if you, you know, like they really had a shit out of him. Like, why are you even pinning him? Why is he even in this match, first of all? And then if he's in the match, why is he getting pinned? None of it made any sense. Like, just leave him out of it. Like, he would have gained more by not even being in the title match than being in it and losing like that.
I think we all agree on that, right?
Yeah. Stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, Jay, I mean, there's so many little tick marks that happened over and over. And even, you know, even like Booker. Like, I know you mentioned him not being a top-level guy. But he comes in, he has a hot debut, but then he gets, you know, he hurts Austin, and then he kind of gets hurt. And then you have The Rock kill him, you know, like 2 straight months. So, you know, you had to have him team with Shane against The Rock on the other pay-per-view. So it's like that, you know, then that killed him off pretty much as anything effective, that he couldn't even hang with The Rock in a handicap match. So like that, you know, that stuff doesn't help either.
So it all boils down to the same thing of that ego of WWF is better than WCW, even though they're now the same thing owned by the same guy. Doesn't matter, does it? You know, it's not Vince's idea, so it has to lose. And that's ultimately what the problem was with it all. You know, it was always going to be that way. No matter who they brought in, they'd have beat Hogan if Hogan was representing WCW. They'd have beaten Goldberg, you know, for sure. So it's always been that way, and it always will be that way with Vince.
Yeah, Hogan, I'm curious, I don't know. It's you know, curious to think what WrestleMania could have been. Like, I was always shocked that they didn't at least try and drag it out to Mania. I mean, it's probably for the best that they didn't in the shape it was in. But, you know, it is surprising that they couldn't have held out a little bit longer, especially since the NWO and Flair. I mean, Flair was coming in the next night, but I guess by that point it was in complete fumes anyway, so they had to do something.
Yeah, it was just ended already.
Do you think they could have done something with Flair and kept, I don't know, was WCW so dead by that point? You don't think Flair could have came in and said, you know,
if they brought Flair in immediately.
Oh, not immediately.
Started, I think. You talking January?
I'm talking about when they did, the night after Survivor Series. He comes in.
Oh, yeah.
And says, the Alliance is dead. He says, the Alliance is dead, but that was never really WCW anyway. Here's WCW. You know, and then some of the other guys show up. Like, could that have resuscitated
his crew of big guys? I think that could have worked.
Right. You know, and said that was, you know, you got that piddly shit out of the way, and now I bought the shares, now I own half the company, and guess what? Half of it's WCW. You know, like, could that have saved it on any level?
Well, like Meltzer always says, all you needed was to bring in two guys, Goldberg and Flair as his manager, and that's it.
Yeah.
And
then, right. Or even Bischoff. Even Bischoff.
Or Bischoff, exactly. Yeah. Yep. And, of course, they brought in Bischoff and immediately fucked that up, too. So
he wound up thrown in a dumpster.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Come in and hug Vince on your first night. Oh, okay, that's great.
And he's still, credit to him, he still ended up being like one of the best authority figures they've had in this whole run, like Bischoff. Like he was, you know, one of the most memorable and worked his ass off. For a guy in his position to come in and eat all the shit he did was pretty crazy. You know, it kind of shows you what, you know, that, you know, good on him. I know he got paid for it, but still, he didn't have to come do what he did at all. And he did it. And he was entertaining while he did it. But there you go. So any final thoughts on the Invasion before we put this one down?
We all agree it was a success, right?
Tremendous. Yeah, very. Yeah. Big time. I mean, I guess.
One riveting,
I guess I'll put it this way. Monetarily for them, it probably was, right? I mean, because they didn't spend shit to fucking buy it. So, I mean, on some levels.
They worked out well buying the company, without a doubt. Right. Yeah.
I mean, they made the money back probably on DVDs and the network and everything else. So.
Oh, God. Many they have times made so though. Much money off DVDs. Yeah, exactly.
And it wound up being pretty good for Booker T, too, you know?
Right, yeah.
Who's still hanging around.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a few guys that benefited, like even Hurricane. Like, where the fuck would Shane Helms really have gone without that gimmick? I mean, he probably would have been trolling around TNA in the early days, and that would have been it. But, you know, he got a whole lifetime out of that Hurricane gimmick. So, I mean, there's a couple guys that benefited from the failure. Well, there you go. All right, so why don't we go ahead and take another break? We're going to listen to what's going on some of our other podcast feeds. We're going to come back, and we'll be talking more current day this time. We're going to jump ahead quite a bit. We talk some Roman Reigns before we wrap things up. So we'll be right back after this break. Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySimulation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the PlaySimulation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit clotheslines and headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and, Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one.
All right, Place to Be Nation, we're back. Hope you enjoyed hearing about everything it has to offer for you on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. You can go ahead and subscribe to that today on iTunes. You can leave some feedback. You can rate us as well. That helps get some ears and some eyes on us. So now we're going to take things to the more current day. We're going to head to 2015-ish. We're going to talk some Roman Reigns. And Mr. Keith, I'm going to turn it over to you to maybe start us with the first question.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a general thing that I want to discuss with Reigns, because, you know, obviously the topic on the blog has always been, you know, Reigns is overpushed, Reigns is terrible, blah blah blah, which I don't necessarily agree with. I mean, no, he's pretty good in the ring like that, but I guess I want to take a little bit more of a devil's advocate on this one and throw it out here. It's like, do you think that the hatred of Reigns is really overblown compared to what that, you know, the way that his push has actually gone in the last year or so? Because I mean, if you look at it, since he was popped for, you know, the whatever it was last summer, you know, he had to lose the title to Seth Rollins. He's doing jobs for Dean Ambrose. He gets put in a feud with Rusev, and like his match got taken off SummerSlam. He was U.S. champion for a while, just kind of in a, you know, in a mid-card role. He's losing twice to Kevin Owens, lost at the December pay-per-view, lost again at the Royal Rumble, and then he still lost at the Royal Rumble match itself. So I mean, really, like the fans, you know, still treat him as somebody who's overpushed and overbooked. And I mean, admittedly, he was voted number one in the PWI 500, so there, you know, might be something to that. But I mean, like really, is Roman Reigns as overpushed as, you know, the kind of the online backlash would portray him as being, or do you think that maybe WWE has kind of taken the hint with him a little bit and kind of toned it down, you know, aside from booking him against The Undertaker at WrestleMania, which
can I actually even go back further than that? And at the start of all this, because I feel like the genesis of this was all obviously Royal Rumble 2015. And
yes.
I really want to know, do people, you know, did this organically build because people didn't like Roman Reigns, or did it start because they were mad about Daniel Bryan and Reigns became the, you know, became the whipping dog, and it just, he just never get the fuck out of the doghouse. You know, it's like it is this avalanche just rolled him up into a big snowball, and it has never stopped rolling on him.
Yeah.
Because I've argued on many podcasts for many years, whether it's Place to Be, whether it was the Kevin Kelly Show at the time, whether it was Clotheslines and Headlines, I've said many times that if they had just not had Daniel Bryan in that friggin' Royal Rumble, and they just held him out knowing he wasn't going to win, and had him come back a few weeks later on SmackDown saying, oh, he's finally cleared, he can come back now, the backlash is so much less, because you wouldn't have known that Bryan was able to wrestle at WrestleMania. Everyone just would have said, okay, you know, Bryan wasn't healthy enough to win the Rumble, so they went with Reigns. Like, I feel like the backlash would have been 100% less for Roman Reigns that night if Bryan just wasn't even in the match or wasn't even known to be cleared yet. Do you guys agree disagree with that?
Yeah, I guess the question then is, like, do they legitimately think that people like Roman Reigns? I mean, because the whole idea of doing that, right, was like, and it's a question I still don't know the answer to. Like,
I think at the time they did, I feel like. I mean, I felt like he was pretty over when he came back and, you know, he from that injury or whatever, he beat Orton at SummerSlam. Like, I feel like he was in a good spot. It felt organic. He didn't feel overpushed at that point, right?
I think he was in a good spot up until the wellness test. I think that's what really, like, you know, that's the point that when it's like really the Schadenfreude kicked in.
Right.
And fans would be like, ha ha, you failed a drug test. And And the thing is, he didn't really show any remorse for it. It didn't feel like he was necessarily kind of punished for it right away. It felt like, you know, well, he's a top guy and he just gets a slap on the wrist and moves on. I think that's when, well, part of that, that's when it really kicked in.
You think they hated him before that, though, right?
Yeah.
He was hated before. I think if you go back to 2014, was it the Rumble? When was that the one Batista won?
Yeah, Reigns was the guy everyone loved.
Everyone wanted Reigns, yeah. So, they did love him at one point. I think it's when people found out that there was a report that Dave wrote one time that Roman Reigns was Vince's guy, and he was the guy they were banking on for the future. And I think that sort of went more widespread than a lot of sort of internet reports do. And people were like, well, no, fuck, we want Brian and we want whoever, you know, and we don't want this guy. And I think it started with sort of the smart fans and then snowballed as they started to boo him, kind of like with Cena, I guess. It became like the in vogue thing to do. You know, it's cool to boo Roman Reigns now. Let's all boo Roman Reigns. And I think half the fans who boo him now don't even know why they boo him. It's just because everyone else boos him.
Well, there's a thing. The thing is, too, there was a while there, right, where he was it was the in vogue thing to boo him, but people would cheer him at the host shows, and host shows were doing pretty good with him, right?
Yeah.
And, like, so you could say, oh, well, you know, this is just smart fan backlash. And then what happened was, and then it kind of kept going from there to the point where people kept booing him, and it became the unvogue thing to think he was, you know, he was not cool and he was terrible. And then it actually, then his host shows actually did start to drop. And now it's to the point where he doesn't draw anymore because it has been killed off by this, right? Like the thing, you know, the perception of him has actually, it's become such an ingrained part of him that's become reality, right? Yeah, like he doesn't draw anymore now. Like there was a point where he could have, where if they had played it right, then, you know, then they could have turned it into something, but then they just kept trying to push through it. And basically now, it's killed him off as a top guy completely now. And still they won't give up on it.
And they did a good job for a while when they backed off after he lost to Rollins at Mania, and they did the stuff where they teamed with him and Ambrose. Like, it was starting to work there over the summer. Like, they really stuck with it, with having him and Ambrose be buddies, and they had the tag match at SummerSlam, and, like, he was kind of being rebuilt nicely. And then they fucked him again. Like, they did this guy's no favor for a guy that supposedly, I mean, you can believe all the stuff you want. You know, everyone knows out there with the Dylan Hales political hit theory that's out on Twitter, where, they, you know, for every, everyone thinks they're behind him, but that Triple H was behind, like, setting him up and fucking him over endlessly. But, you know, if you look at how they treated him, I mean, maybe there's some credence there because he gets rebuilt nicely over the summer. It set him up. He wins the tournament. Okay, we're feeling good. And then they have Sheamus fucking beat him with the briefcase, you know? And then they dick him around. Right, and he cries.
Exactly.
They dick him around. And then he wins the Rumble. Okay, we're kind of feeling... No, never mind. He didn't win the Rumble. Triple H eliminated him, and now he's not champion again. You know, it's like... And by WrestleMania, no one cared. You know, just no one cared. It would have been like if Lex Luger finally won the title at WrestleMania 11. You know, it's like, all right, you fucked this guy enough that we don't give a shit anymore. And I feel like at Survivor Series with the tournament, everyone was kind of back on board a bit. You know, it's like, okay, you know, he's been working hard. He had some really good matches this year. He had the awesome match with Brock at Mania. Like, all right, here we are. And then, you know, they should have had him kill Sheamus when Sheamus tried to cash in. Like, that was...
Right.
That thing with
That's
Sheamus worked pretty well. He was really over when he beat the hell out of Triple H, though.
He was, but couldn't they just have had him retain against Sheamus and then beat the shit out of Triple H? You know what I mean? Like, he didn't need to get screwed out of the belt again.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, that's the thing that with Reigns that I've been arguing this all along, which people think I'm crazy for. But I mean, people say, oh, well, you know, he's over pushed. It's like, no, he's not.
No.
It's like they,
he's a jobber.
In fact, they should have pushed him even harder.
Right.
Like, if he's going to be a heel like that, just, you know, give him some credibility. Have him go out there and just beat everybody dominantly. And you know what? And look at fucking Braun Strowman.
Right.
They got Braun Strowman out there. Get over.
That's what people want.
This is awesome against goddamn Big Show. Like, you're telling me they couldn't have done that with Roman Reigns if they didn't want to?
He should.
I was fully on board with that at the beginning.
And they could have done it at Mania. He should have just beaten Brock. He should have just beaten Brock. And they fucked around with the Rollins thing, and that's what started this whole, you know, like, they worked hard to get him back over. He had a really good match with Bryan at Fastlane. They had the fun face-to-face thing in the snow after the Rumble. Like, you know, like, he was kind of getting back okay. And so what if he gets booed at Mania? I think through hard work they could have gotten him there. And then they just kept screwing him, and it never ended. The screwing just never ended. And you can even go back before that and say they didn't do him any service by pushing him as hard as they did early. What they should have done was give him the Warrior, right? He should have won the IC belt or the U.S. title, whatever, in late 14 and let him have a year just dominating his way up the card, beating everyone in his way, and then he's ready.
It.
Right.
They Luger'd him. They Lex Luger'd him, you know?
Like, they did.
super, super, super push that no one's ready for. Vince is the only one who sees it, and everybody else is like, "No, we're not there yet," you know. And yeah. But Vince, he's stubborn, persists.
I don't think no one saw it. I mean, like the point when they first split him off and they had him going out there doing the drive by and doing the Superman punch. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw it. I was like, okay. You know, like the Superman punch, this is an awesome, awesome finisher that he can do. It's like, you know, it's out of nowhere. It's simple. It's easy to do. Drive by look cool. And it just, you know, it seemed like there was something where you could put the pieces together. And then that's the thing, though. They went from point A to point Z in like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, right? Like it just skipped a bunch of steps.
Right.
Right.
Right. He should have won the 16 Rumble and won his first title at Mania 32. I mean that's what it should have been. He should have had a year of the Rocket push in the upper mid card. Just, you know, have a good feud with like a Rusev, a good feud with the Bray, you know, like run through those guys, and then maybe he beats Ambrose in a friendly match to earn a title. You know, something along those lines where he just has a good year like Warrior did from 88 through 89, something like that, to then set him up for the big win. Like, to me, that's where they failed. And then they failed again by not having to beat Brock. And then they failed again by not just letting him keep the, you know, like, I mean, they just kept not doing him any favors at all. And at the end of the day, the people who sit here and say he's not a good wrestler are nuts, too. I mean, look at his quality of big-time matches.
Yeah.
It's like the Cena syndrome, that, though, you know.
Right.
Cena has great matches, especially, you know, last year or the year before, especially. And people still think he sucks. And he doesn't suck.
No.
You know, and Reigns is the same. He had so many great matches over these last few years, you know, and it's just, I don't know how anyone can think he sucks in the ring. I mean, when you look at some of the guys on that roster, especially.
I wouldn't think he sucks, but I think he's, he has a very limited selection of people that he can have a good match with, I think. Whereas somebody like John Cena just goes out there and just, you know, has 4-star matches with everybody that you put him in there with. It. I think one of the ironic things too about this is that it's making John Cena look really good by comparison. All the Roman Reigns,
right?
Backlash,
right. Right. I feel like that's
people are like, oh man, John Cena's pretty good after all, right?
I think the Cena love has gotten better with him kind of being semi-retired, and then like you said, the Reigns stuff are making people almost nostalgic for Cena in a way.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a great comparison because Cena, at Reigns' point, would have been like, what, 05, 06? I mean, I guess by 07 he was having good matches with almost everyone, but for a bit there he was struggling. You know, he only had certain guys as well.
He did.
So I mean,
yeah,
maybe
they were
Reigns
smart,
can,
though, because they put him in the ring with Kurt Angle and Chris Jericho every night. And,
right.
And
they tried
and
to do that with
that
Reigns.
Level as a worker.
Yeah, they tried to. I mean, look at, you know, those matches with AJ Styles were great. I mean, he had a great match with Big Show before Strowman. You know, like him and Big Show had that really fun, was Extreme Rules or whatever, where they had that fun plunder match, the two of them. And
right.
He's had good matches with Ambrose. He's had good stuff with Rollins and Owens. I mean, he has. Yeah, I mean, his big match track record is pretty damn good. And you know, I don't blame him for Mania last year. That was pure booking nonsense. He should have just mowed through Triple H in like a minute and a half.
That was longer than 90 seconds is a huge mistake, yeah.
Well, Triple H has got to get his moment in, right?
Yep, his half-hour-long moment.
Half-hour-long moment, yeah.
Jesus. I mean, I was sitting there live, and I'm like, you know, as the Rock segment's going, I'm like, oh, wow, they're going to really, you know, they're going to make this main event like a squash and really put over Reigns, and that'll be it. And then we get the big entrance, and then we get the Reigns entrance, and then we get the lockups. And then, you know, I'm like, oh my God, they're going to do the fucking epic. And there we were 25 minutes later.
Steve Austin did an interview recently where he was actually blaming, he actually blamed the Rock segment for kind of destroying the Reigns Triple H match.
Oh, for sure.
In a lot of ways. Like the Rock thing kind of burned out the crowd and, you know, killed it off essentially before they even had a chance to go up to the Reigns thing, which is like, I don't know about that. I mean, we were like, what, like 5.5 hours into that show by that point? I was just like,
done.
Just like, please end this show now. My laptop is at like 5% power. I'm trying to like, you know, I'm just wanting them to pull the plug on it, basically. So, I mean, I don't think that specifically was a problem, like Austin says. But I mean, like, yeah, it was in a bad place.
I think it was a big part of the problem. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think they should have had that earlier in the show, or it shouldn't have been as long. Like, if you want to have Rock have a match, just have him come out and have a match. If you want to have him come out and blow the fire and talk about the attendance, just do that. Like, you didn't need all of it. You know, I mean, that was just an absurdly long segment. I think it did kill the main event. No one wanted to see a 25-minute, you know, Triple H-style main event after that. It was just, like, everyone was just done. It was no favor.
Well, I don't think anybody wanted to see that before that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right, but if it happens 20 minutes earlier, it's maybe not as bad. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Yeah, yeah. Maybe. I mean, I think once you're 5.5 hours in, it doesn't matter anymore. You know, it doesn't matter what you put on at that point.
Yeah, but the Rock Cena stuff, well, I mean, you know, that got everyone going. Like, I feel like they could have just... I don't know. I just feel like they didn't do them any favors. And also, you know, big culprit too is Shane and The Undertaker going a fucking half hour. Like, that was unneeded too. Yeah. So, I mean,
well, that's, you know, that's the thing too. Is like the other thing, the other problem is that, you know, the Reigns Triple H thing had the same problem that Triple H against Jericho did at WrestleMania 18, right? Where you go out there and just Undertaker Shane was a huge train wreck, and you just, who, you know, how do you follow that?
Right.
Like, the guy dove off the cage and died, right? Like, you know, it's like, well, what do you put out there next? Like, to, you know, Reigns and Triple H going out there and headlocking each other for half an hour? Like,
well, no, they doubled down and have the two biggest stars of the last 20 years go out and have a tag match. You know, they,
yeah, exactly.
You know, their first, you know, Rock's first match in however long, and you know, Cena's first match since the injury, and like, you know, they double down on the cage stunt with that, and then send Reigns out there to die in the main event, you know?
Yeah.
There was a lot of bad booking on that show as well in terms of the results. You know, none of it really pleased the fans. You know, you didn't have Sasha win, AJ didn't win, etc. And it's like, well, by that point, they're putting all their eggs in the Reigns basket of thinking, well, they're going to at least cheer Roman.
Right.
You know,
nope.
After they've been so devastated all night, it's like, no, you've misread that one, you know.
Yeah, but again, though, that comes, that it's the thing I can't wrap my head around. Is like, does Vince McMahon legitimately think that people like Roman Reigns, or is he just like, he, does he really, like, is that really what he thinks? That this is just like a bunch of,
well,
you know,
we'll
smart mark outliers?
I mean,
yeah,
we,
I guess
we know that it's going to be Reigns and Taker at Mania. We all know that. Well, we're pretty sure of that. And I guess the question is Reigns going to go into that as a babyface, and they think they're going to put him over Taker, and Taker will give him the babyface rub at the end, which they tried before with The Rock, and it went horrifically. Or is he going to be a full-on heel, which I think he should be, and then beat it?
You know, I mean, I think,
yeah. Go ahead, JD.
I think that speaks to the problem. Is I think they think, well, if he beats Undertaker, then the fans. That has nothing to do with it.
Right.
You know, what everything is they present him as a cool guy, and he's the most uncool character like in 15 years. So it doesn't matter who he beats. You know, I mean, he's a dork.
Right, and he's actually shown some of that.
The dork.
He's actually channeled, you know, when they let him just kind of be an asshole in himself. I mean, I think he's got some of that, you know, he doesn't have Batista's
that
charisma.
That's going to work a little bit, yeah.
Right, but he's got that heel kind of, you know, bring me the fat chicks, you know, whatever, like, Batista had going on. And, like, I feel like he could have that about him if they let it go. If I'm them, and you're really interested in salvaging Reigns as something, I think what you do is you have him go heel, like James said. You have him beat Undertaker. And then if you're obsessed with putting the belt on Goldberg, I have Goldberg beat Brock again at fucking Mania, and then have Reigns the next night just kill Goldberg. And, I mean, if you really want to make him a big heel star and rebuild him, you can do it in two shots right there if you want. I mean, have him beat Taker at Mania decisively, and then the next night beat Goldberg decisively and win the world title as a heel. And there you go. I mean, if you want to really get him
possible.
Over.
Well, I think that is possible that they'll do that.
Yeah.
I think it's possible as well, yeah. The other thing that really mystifies me about Reigns too, is when they split up the Shield, you know, the company that has to meddle with everything, right? They changed Rollins' character and his look, and they changed Ambrose's character and his look, and Roman Reigns is still like, you know, like Tito Santana with a strike force.
He's still the D'Lo Brown tribute act. You know?
Exactly. Like, it's like, oh yeah, now there's some, you know, stripes on his outfit or whatever, right?
Right.
You put him out there and put the world title on him again, you know?
Like, again, yeah, it speaks to the uncool thing. Like, why does he still dress like he's in the army? You know,
and he's a built guy. He's got a good look. Like, why wouldn't they get that fucking shirt off him? You know what I mean? Like,
right?
Let him go out there.
Show those meaty thighs off, you know?
Like, right? Push him. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I hate to agree with Dylan, but it makes you think, like, is there something out there that... was really secretly against him all this time? I don't know. I mean, there's so many, you know, missteps along the way that after a while it feels like it stops being coincidental. I mean, I don't know.
I almost wonder, too, if because the complaints that are voiced, I think, are wrong in the sense that so many people say that he's pushed down our throats. And really, he's not, like we've talked about. I mean, pushed down your throats is a guy that goes out and wins and wins and wins and wins and wins.
Like, Cena.
There's a history. There's history. The fans accept that. Braun Strowman has pushed down our throats. And we love him.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, look at Finn Balor. He was only there for a month, but he pinned Roman Reigns and he pinned Seth Rollins.
Right.
And fans loved him. You know, pushing someone down our throats is what fans have a history of accepting. And I think maybe that's why they don't do change, because they say, we're not pushing them down their throats. We're not pushing them down your throats. And they know that they're not, but... I don't know. I think that complaint that people make is so wrong. I think that's part of the problem, that they don't do it.
Exactly. I mean, we're wrestling fans. We know the deal. You know, like, it's like, he's getting the rocket push. Okay, so great. So go out and push him, right? like we're fine with that. We can know that. We accept it, and it's like, but the Reigns thing is so bizarre. It's just like, well, you're pushing this guy as a top star, but he loses all of his big matches. So it's like, it's like, well, what is it?
What we said at the start, though, you know, it's cool to boo him. I think that's what it is.
It's a confluence of things. I mean, it's him. You know, you mentioned Braun, but Braun was kind of built organically. He got himself in shape. Then he started kind of beating the shit out of two guys at once and three guys at once. You know, and he worked his way up. And Reigns, he didn't get that. But part of it, you know, part of it is because the Shield was a main event act. So, you know, can you have him dip back and go after the IC belt? You know, maybe not. But they didn't let him organically build. And then the Bryan stuff happened. And then, like you said, James, it became cool to boo him. And then that's it. It's been the swell of, well, fuck this guy. He never earned this. He's not, doesn't belong.
Let me throw one other
spot
in there too, Justin. You know, you mentioned the Bryan thing. Right around that time, too, was the CM Punk podcast with Colt Cabana, where he kind of crapped all over Roman and made it known what we'd already read, you know, make Roman look strong. That was the phrase that so many of us were saying over and over. You know, and CM Punk was, you know, the bitter fan's outlet. And if he says it, then we agree with it. You know what I mean? And so when he voiced those lines about Roman, I think that really sealed his fate with a lot of those type of fans too.
Yeah, and I mean, like earlier, like, you know, after the Royal Rumble, right? Like, nobody has any direction, right? Who knows? We still have no idea. I mean, we kind of know what's going on with AJ Styles and where it's going, but we're all in denial about it. But I mean, like technically on the TV shows, right? There's no real direction for AJ Styles. Right. You know, nobody knows what's going on there, but you know, we sure as fuck know where Roman Reigns is doing for the next pay per views, right? Like, he's being set up for Braun Strowman and he's being set up for The Undertaker, and they make sure that he has both of those matches set up. So, like, you know, there is something to that, right? You know, keep Roman, make you there. He's the first priority. Make sure Roman Reigns stays strong, and it's everybody else gets, you know, stampeded under it like that. So there is something to that, I think.
Yeah,
you know, the thing with the overpush. Do you think in their mind they are pushing him, but they just have lost the ability to push guys properly these days? They don't know how to do it anymore.
Yes,
the 50-50.
That's true.
Push and all that. You know, yes.
Although look
I
at
think
a,
in
I
their
mean,
mind, they are pushing.
They pushed AJ well after the Jericho stuff. I mean, I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah,
but he's a heel.
Yeah. Well, Reigns is a heel.
Yeah, but even like this, as Scott just mentioned, you know, they've got the Braun match in place, which I'm not a fan of the idea of Braun losing to Roman. But the idea is, okay, so you have him beat Braun to build him up for the Undertaker. Okay, that makes sense.
The DQ, you know,
right? But that makes sense. But even then, okay, so let's go back a month. Why'd you have him lose? Why'd you have him lose twice on the Royal Rumble?
Right.
You know, like.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. They don't know how to make baby faces anymore. It's just
right. It's
mind-boggling that this company that had 4 years of the biggest baby face in history, and they just don't know how to do it anymore.
Yep.
It's the 50-50 stuff, isn't it? My turn, your turn. And, like, it's, you know, Triple H explained the concept, didn't he, of, well, you know, we don't want to beat anybody too bad because there's fans of that guy, so we have to give them some wins as well. So, you know, you don't want to lose part of your audience. And the other thing is,
did he really say that?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, wow. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but this is from talking to people who've worked there. And the mentality now that WWE have is they don't want to make anybody a star,
right?
Sort of like a true star on the level of, say, an Austin or a Punk on a sort of level, a couple of levels below that, or Rock or anybody like that. They don't want a megastar like that because if they lose that guy, it could fuck them. You know, if they turned up in TNA, not that it would, you know, even if TNA had Austin at its peak, they'd still fucking fail. But that's their concern now. So they don't want to push anybody too far and make them too big. They want to keep everyone just at a level where they have complete control over them and that they don't start dictating to them. That's the mentality that they've adopted.
They have nothing to worry about because nobody's going to be a star. So.
Yeah, but that's why they do it that way.
I also don't think they think that wins and losses matter because, and JD, we've gone back and forth on this.
Sure.
I think in their mind, they want to reheat someone, they can reheat them. I mean, and that's why, like, when AJ Styles lost to Jericho Mania, I was like, you know, whatever. Because if they wanted to make him a star, and this was my exact point, Jordan. I think we argued it that night. I'm like, if they want to make AJ a fucking star, they'll then push him. And that's what they did. They were like, "Who does anyone really remember he lost? I mean, besides us talking about it, like, that seems like lifetimes ago that he lost to Jericho at Mania. Like, it's a footnote at this point." Because in their mind, they can, every show, especially Mania, is its individual one-night entity for the fans that are watching on that night. So on that night, so-and-so wins, and then if they want to reheat... We saw with Sheamus. He was dead in the fucking water, you know, and then all of a sudden he's world champion. It's like, they feel
the
that they...
On that same show.
Right, exactly.
Same show, you wouldn't.
They feel like they can reheat anyone they want at any time, and I think that's just their mentality.
Look at what the rumor is right now on SmackDown, which I'm not watching it as we're taping, but, I mean, people are talking about Luke Harper winning a Battle Royal and going into the title match at WrestleMania.
Right.
Luke Harper's won, like, 2 TV matches in 5 years.
Right.
You know?
They don't care. They don't care what happened months ago. They'll call back to it when they need to, but they don't care. Like, I think they just feel that, okay, at any given time, at any given point, we can just make a guy, you know, make a guy into a star again. I think that's where they are mentally at this point. They're like, whatever. Not even a star, but just they can push a guy into a match that you may feel like, oh, there's no way. Look at, like, oh, Cesaro's getting, you know, buried left and right. And, like, if they wanted to tomorrow, Cesaro could be the world champion and everyone would eat it up. You know,
you got
it's
a chessboard full of pawns. You know, they're all pawns and anyone can switch places.
Exactly. That's what it is.
It's not the guys who draw anymore. It's the company, right? It's the brand.
And that's what they wanted, and that's where they're at.
Well, I mean, case in point, they did the first. We had a SmackDown host show here in Saskatoon for the first time in 6 years. A main event of Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles, and The Miz in a 3-man match for the Intercontinental title. Fuck all else on the card, and we drew like 8,000 people, and there's like it's crazy. Like it's like there's literally nothing announced, and they still. You know, filled up, you know, half the arena, and there was lines literally 150 people long at all the merchandise booths. So, I mean, yeah, that absolutely tells you what, you know, where the drawing card is now. It's not these guys at all. Who's going to see The Miz, you know? Like,
But then they could just call upon the guys from the past once a year and pop a number for Mania. And
that's the thing, too, with Mania. You know, you got to accept it for what it is. People get mad, all the concerts and those old stars. Like, it's not meant to be part of their canon at this point. It's just not. It's a weekend festival that stands above everything else. It's not what it used to be. It's not the culmination of the year. It's not the, you know, to them it's just, this is our chance to try and win a bunch of fans back, and we're going to blow it out. We're going to have all these old stars. We're going to bring in some celebrities. We're going to make it a concert, make it a, you know, a circus atmosphere, and that's what it is. And that's it.
Really, it's the Raw the night after. That's the real WrestleMania now, I think.
It does. Yeah.
And now maybe the SmackDown, too, since now that's live and we got the brand split.
Right, and I think they're trying to do the same thing with even, like, SummerSlam and maybe even Rumble and Survivor Series, where there are destination events that almost live above everything else. And in one way, it's good.
Survivor Series there.
Uh-huh.
I said they're going to struggle trying to get that with Survivor Series, I think.
And they tried this year a little bit. You know, they made the weekend around it with NXT and everything.
It was pretty good this year, though. You know, the concept of the 5-on-5 main event could work,
right?
With Raw versus SmackDown, if they keep the brands separate, which they have for the most part.
No, they've done a good job making the lines different.
Now, do you feel like would moving Roman Reigns to SmackDown freshen him up enough to help him out? Do you think, or is it kind of a lost cause now at this point?
I think it hurts him because no one wants to see him over AJ. At least on Raw,
there is that. You'd have to maybe swap him for AJ, I guess.
Yeah, at least on Raw, it's kind of like, all right. I mean, everyone loves Owens mostly, but not enough. You know, like I think AJ is like untouchable at this point. Like everyone just wants him to be the man.
AJ's like a Daniel Bryan, where people want him to win all his feuds. You know,
yeah. Now here's another question too. I guess about like with Roman too is like. What was the point of making him the U.S. champion even? Because that really kind of undercut him too, where it's like they put him over Rusev and ruin him. He's the U.S. champion. The first thing is, now Roman Reigns is going for the world title against Kevin Owens. It's like, well, why the fuck does he need the U.S. title then? Like, it's, I don't even understand. He didn't even do anything with it. He didn't defend it. You know, he finally dropped it to Chris Jericho to
deception,
you know, further
after. Because it makes him look like a mid-carder. So it, in theory, it tempers the heat against him that the fans have.
Yeah.
You know, potentially. I mean, I assume that would be a reason why.
Although, by the same token, people really love Rusev now, so all you're doing is pissing on that part.
I think Reigns is like...
Again, they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I think every era has its poster boy, and I think Reigns will be the poster boy for the era of the adversarial relationship between the fans and the company. I think it's died off. Like, I don't think that hatred is there like it was in 14 and 15, where it felt like It started really with the Cena Orton unification match at the end of 13, and the fucking of Brian by Triple H and Stephanie and everything. Like, I feel like that's where it started, and it lasted for almost, you know, maybe a year and a half or so, of this real, like, WWE trolling the fans. Like, you know, the Rumble where Kane and Big Show eliminated every single favorite guy of the fans. You know, like, they throw out Punk, they throw out Ziggler. You know, like, they're eliminating everyone they like. That was, like, the big middle finger. And just wanting to run with Batista and Orton at Mania and not have Bryan even in there. You know, like, it was just a year and a half of just this pure hate between the fans and the company. It subsided, but I feel like Reigns was kind of the poster child of that. Like, he got caught up in that whole mess. You know what I mean?
He did, yeah. He was the face of the corporate company that they hated.
Right.
I guess, you know. But give it a month and we'll have that again if he beats Taker as a babyface. I really
yeah.
I don't know. Do people care about Taker Mania enough anymore for that? Like, I feel like last year was a big enough slap in the dick. You know what I mean? I feel like it's...
I don't know. Because he's the guy, you know, he's the WrestleMania guy. And
maybe if he ended the streak, it'd be worse. I feel like at this point, it's kind of like whatever.
He
should have ended the streak.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Just go all the way with it. That's what I've been saying all along, you know? Like, if you're going to troll the fans, it just, like, you, like, the Vince McMahon of 1997 would have just went out there and, like, you know, been like, you know, fuck you, fans.
Right.
Like, you know, make Roman Reigns the world champion, and he ends the streak, and, you know, just goes out there and beats Goldberg and Brock Lesnar single-handedly, you know? Like, it just, yeah. That I feel like is what really would have done it. And then you would have had the most hated heel in the business. And
yeah, it would have been rolling in the dough. You can't be half pregnant, right? And just go all in.
That's right.
That's it.
Go all in. Like, if you're going with it, don't half-ass it. Then just have him kill everybody. Have him fucking beat AJ in a minute or something. You know, just really piss everybody off.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, we're wrestling fans. We know the deal. Like, we live through Lex Luger and Kevin Nash, you know? Like,
God.
I think they're fine with just getting the reaction. I mean, I think the years of Cena being successful through the back-and-forth reaction has convinced them that, like, any noise is good noise, which, I mean, on some levels, right? But I feel like that's part of it. I feel like the, you know, just being in that position of, like, all right, Cena had all those years where he still sold a ton of merch, but half the crowd hated him, and they were defiant about it. And I feel like they're doing the same thing here. Like, whatever. Some people will cheer him. A lot of people are going to boo him. He's just going to be himself. Like, he's not really a face or a heel. He's just Roman Reigns, and he's doing his thing. And he's still going to sell merch and do this. And, like, I feel like that's their mindset these days on this stuff.
Because they know the people who boo him are going to come back. Like, right. They've got them. They're hooked.
Right.
You know, they've got him for life. We're all destined to suffer through this forever. You know, for all we might now and again say, that's it. I'm done. You know, we're never done.
Right.
Yeah, people on the blog say that all the time, and then they're back. So, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. And they'll always be – we'll always be the loudest, you know, and people like-minded folk like us. You know, we'll always be the loudest critics. But we'll also be the ones who are always there watching everything they do. So they don't care what we think anymore.
Well, and they know, like we said, there's always something they can hook back with. I mean, whether it's, you know, the network, whether it's the Cruiserweight, whether it's 205, whether it's the European title tournament. You know, like, they can always, or the UK title tournament, they can always find something. Like I said, the next thing will be Nakamura will come up. You know, Samoa Joe versus AJ Styles, if they want to go with that. You know, like, there's so much stuff. Finn Balor will be back. And they know that they'll always have one thing they can dangle out there to keep everyone on the hook to stick around.
Of course.
For sure.
Maybe they get it more than we think, more than we give them credit for, you know? Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I'm not convinced about that.
Maybe. Maybe. All right. So why don't we go to wrap things up? This is a pretty spirited effort, guys. I think we took some pretty dead topics and breathed some nice life into them. That's a good discussion. You know, you could read more of this across all of the channels on social media. You can, of course, find more from Scott on these topics and many others. RSPWFAQ.net. You can read all about this stuff, plus much more else in James Dixon's Titan Sinking series, available on Amazon. And you can hear Jordan on these podcasts talking about the same stuff as well. And me too. I'm always here as well. So you can find us all at PlaceNumeration.com. You can follow us on social media, Facebook.com/PlaceNumeration, and Twitter, Place2BNation. We have new podcasts and written articles each and every day for you. Subscribe to iTunes, and you'll never miss any of them. And, of course, plenty more to talk about as we head towards WrestleMania season. We actually have a huge WrestleMania project kicking off coming up in a few weeks, and that'll run right through Mania Day. So a lot's going on here at Place to Be Nation. I want to thank the panel here for joining us. I think we'll do this again, like we had said, maybe quarterly or a few times a year when we dig up some more topics that we can cover. But it was a lot of fun, guys. I want to thank you all for joining me. For James and Scott and Jordan, I'm JT. We're out. We'll talk to you down the line someday.
one ring came, Jody blew a spark. Thought about Judy round the corner in the park. Flipping like a dipstick, hip to the news. Practicing the range, bellowing the blues. Jack was the confident, swift like a skate. Yo, Jody, yo, gotta go, got a date. Padlock, Jody screaming, wait, wait, wait. Don't worry, hun, he replies, I'm keeping the faith.